Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Dreamcatchers on Brain Injury Radio. We're trying out a new chat room tonight, but tonight's title happens to do with your, basically, like the song goes, you're a shining star, no matter who you are, shining bright to see who you can truly be. And, you know, that's what we ought to be, that shining star. When you have a brain injury, people will come in and they'll try to knock you down and shoot arrows and darts at you and try to point all your imperfections out. Let them throw those stones at you. They're full of imperfections to start with. So are we all. I'm not perfect, and I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my scars and things in a sense that they're my badges of honor. That's how we need to look at it. And, you know, if every day we get out of bed and go for the moon, kind of like the Apollo program did, or when the astronauts were really saying, I hope this rocket won't come to pieces when we're, are we really getting in this giant spaceship? It might fall to pieces. In the old days when they were, I mean, we lost the space shuttle. Look at that. But those seven people got on there with a bold mission in their mind, planning on going there. There's a school teacher on board. I'm forgetting her name as I go to say it. Can you remember anybody? I can't say the teacher's name that was going to fly on the space shuttle. And she died, but she died loving and doing what she wanted to do. Life is that way. And sadly, life and death happen a lot. I was just visiting a while ago with my friend Edna, who lost her husband just a few days ago, visiting with her just in the past hour and a half. And she was just being thankful for the time she spent with her husband and the support group members that we have that came to visit her. And my girlfriend and I just went over and brought her some flowers a while ago, and she just had a smile, and she looked so sad and so hurt. But she said, you know, it's people coming in, showing that a little extra act of kindness that makes the difference in the day, being able to make it through the day. What are you going to do today or tomorrow to make somebody else smile, even if you're a brain injury survivor? Come on, do it. Get up and do it. I'm going to say, America, get up off your duff or your butt and do something with your life. There are multiple millions of brain injury survivors that have been told they can't do anything. By humbug, there are people that are professionals that are saying, well, those poor people, what are they going to do one day? Well, they're going to start training or start learning from us how to train to be better at serving us. Because customer service, you ever think about the customer service industry alone? Their customer service is either bad or good or somewhere in between. In the brain injury business, it might be good sometimes. It might be horrible sometimes. It might be just mediocre. What are you going to do to make it something big, bold, and beautiful? Like the TV show, Bold and the Beautiful. You know, what's it going to take? I'm ready to say, America, world, wake up, snap out of it, and bust a move. Just because you have a brain injury doesn't mean to give up on life. It doesn't mean that you're supposed to surrender to yourself or surrender to whoever suddenly takes over your life and takes control. And I'm telling you this not as an authority, not as a power figure, not as somebody who says he knows everything, but I have been through it. Just like Craig Cecilia and Kim Justice and all the hosts and everything that come on here. Each one of them has a unique and different story, different hardships, different survival methods, different characteristics. One loves sports. One might like ballerina. One might love baseball, but not like basketball. You know, somebody like me, I love motocross racing, and there's a monster truck and motocross jumping thing coming to Augusta, Georgia. I'm going to try to go to it, and very soon. I forgot the date on it, but that was my sport of choice when I was a teenager. I wanted to be a professional motocross racer, and I had a motocross racing bike that was so powerful, I'm amazed I didn't get killed on it. I mean, you start the engine and go from 0 to 70 in what seemed like 2 seconds. I mean, wing, 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 wing. And I didn't know anything about brain injury then. I was riding that motorcycle building jumps out in the woods, and I would jump faster and farther, and I came off that motorcycle with it going under me and tumbling over me. I'm amazed I didn't bust my head wide open, but I wore a helmet always because my brother, who first bought my first motorcycle, which was an Indian dirt bike when I was 11 years old, it's a brown book. I still have it to this day. It's going back from 1973. I still have that very book in my closet right now. I saw it just today. And it says something like Introduction to Motocross and Safety. And safety first. And, you know, if I wouldn't have had that book, I might have gone riding on that thing and not even put my helmet on. It says always wear your helmet. It says always put on your safety gear. Put on your goggles, because something goes flying in your eyes like dirt, and like another dirt bike's up in front of you and they spin their wheels, and all of a sudden it hits you in the eyes. What are you going to do? You're going to go flying off into the woods and hit a tree, or go jumping down a cliff? I had something that some people say, you're kidding when you say that. I was following another friend of mine. His name was John. He had a motocross bike too. And he said, "Hey, Les, I want to race you." His had two more gears than mine. We had the same size engine. And he said, "I can outrun you because I've got two more gears." His was the next year after mine. And he goes flying down this trail really, 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 really fast. And I didn't know where I was at. I'm riding like crazy. And we go zigzag, zigzag, and he's just going crazy. And I'm saying, "I ought to stop because he's about to kill me doing this." And all of a sudden, before I knew it, there was pavement underneath of me about 20 feet below me. I had jumped over a highway. And when it hit the other side, the motorcycle, it was like I was trying to do a stunt, not knowing it was an accidental stunt. I should have been killed that day. I was only about 12 or 13 at the time. I had been riding that motorcycle a while. I had taken my safety course, but I didn't think first. I got on that thing thinking I knew what to do when I go flying over cars going down the highway. It was a road that I've always called the Aiken-Augusta Road. It's called US-1 in Aiken, South Carolina. And it was a wide road, and I was going about 50 or 60 miles an hour. And I wasn't trying to do a stunt. I was just flying, and I saw him slam on brakes and throw his motorcycle to the side. As I'm kind of puzzled, and all of a sudden there's nothing underneath of me. It scared me. I thought I was going to die. As I slammed into a clay wall on the other side, and the motorcycle goes flipping all over the place, and I nearly had a very, very dangerous accident. I was bruised. I was cut. I got up and rode the motorcycle home. When I went to bed that night, I was so sore. My mother rubbed my back and put I'm trying to remember what it was called back then, some heating rub or something, like deep heating rub all over my back. And she said, "Les, you're black and blue all over your back." And she said, "I ought to beat your butt for what you did. You should never do that." And I said, "I didn't know what was there." And she said, "That's like life, isn't it? You don't know what's ahead of the way. That's why you need to study things and learn. Your brother taught you how to ride a motorcycle safely, but you didn't ride it safely because you didn't know where you were at." And that's how brain injury happens a lot of times. A lot of times we walk into a situation not knowing what's going to happen. It could be a domestic violence situation, for example, like someone hits you and punches you in the face and hurts you in the head, injures you, or maybe even kills you. It could be any number of any things. Brain injury is a systematic change effort, a thing that happens to so many people. And it's so sad to think that we can't come together as survivors. Craig was talking the other night about we, the survivors, have got to come together and quit fighting. We, the agencies, the agencies that are supposed to serve us, we've got to go to them and say, listen, okay, we're ready. We're ready to rumble. And, Craig, you said something about we need to do something like a Million Man Rock Rollin' March is what I'll call it, because we do. We need to make it bigger than a Million Man. We need to make it so big, so groundswelling, and we got to get people so hungry that they're going to say, you know, I'm going to do this no matter what. I'm going to do it if it hurts. I'm going to do it till I can't. And hopefully someone who is also doing it can. I'm not saying it's easy. We do it because it's hard. The reason I say go to the moon sometimes, it was extremely hard to go to the moon in 1969. Did you know when Apollo 11 landed on the moon, they were almost out of fuel and they were fixing to abort the mission? I don't know how many people know that. They were flying over the surface of the moon and they saw boulders underneath of the moon lander, and they had the countdown for it running out of fuel. It had just a number of seconds left before they had to abort the mission, and the top of the spacecraft would blast off of the bottom half and leave it behind. They almost had a tragedy because they were determined to land, but they landed on the moon in July 20th, 1969. That was a long time ago. They didn't have supercomputers back then. The computer that guided the moon lander wouldn't much equivalent the old Pac-Man system. Their computer froze up and acted bad. Does that sound familiar? And I'm talking about things that really ought to make sense to us, but we as survivors have got to come together as families and peacemakers and become a true shining star. A shining star is something that twinkles a little bit brighter, a lot more cooler, and that really understands that, you know what, it's exactly what we have the opportunity to be. I put a galaxy on here because in a galaxy it's an endless number of stars. You might be one star. You can shine brightly, you can be dimly lit, or you can fizzle out. But we're all a star. What we choose to do with our life and our destiny and our dreams is the difference in making it, breaking it, or completely failing. But you know what? People who said they were complete failures were some of the most famous people in our America's history and the world's history. I mean, the Wright brothers, I mention them sometimes. They thought they were the wrong brothers. You don't hear about all the times they crashed, all the times their airplane wouldn't take off the ground, all the times the wings were broken, all the times they were injured. You hear that they were the first ones to fly. You don't hear that often, do you? Well, like I was talking about our space program, the Apollo program is one that's special to me because I don't know if you know it. The space shuttle is a big rocket. The Apollo moon rocket is more than twice as tall and big as the space shuttle. They had really big, bold dreams of using the Apollo project to build space stations around the moon until it was cut in funding after like Apollo 17, which was the last moon mission. But the mission they had planned were using even bigger spacecraft, and they had bolder missions, but they were cut because of budget cutting and because of the war in Vietnam, and something always gets in the way, and that's kind of how our brain injury world is. We kind of work our way up, and we get working hard, and we say, okay, we're going to get there, and then we get almost there, and it's almost like, okay, I'm comfortable here. I can rest here. And if we rest too long, you know what's going to happen? Another day will happen, and another day will happen, and another day will happen. You say, you know, I don't have the strength to go because your health might get bad, because America's health might be bad. Financially, our country's in a wreck. It is a wreck. Financially, it's a train wreck on fire. And I hate saying that. I love America. But I believe brain injury survivors can help lead us out of it. A lot of times people tell me, well, how do you think I can do that? I'm a brain injury survivor. When you think that way, you disable yourself. That means you're disabled and broken. Don't think you're disabled and broken. You're a shining star. A shining star. Even Ronald Reagan, it made me think just now. I remember a speech he gave a long time ago. He said something about a shining star on a hill in one of his speeches. And I don't remember the speech completely, but I just remember that. And I thought, you know, he's right about a shining star, but the content has to make the difference. And that star I put on the page, it has little stars all around it, but each one of those stars are equal to me. I don't feel like I'm any more special than anybody else, but I don't think I'm less special either. And I think we all have deep inside of us a yearning, a burning, a passion to find out what our life's destiny is. And it saddens me to see that so many survivors have been fighting this battle for so very long and to the point they've nearly worn out. And I know several people, I'll just mention the independent living movement for an example, who have lost their life due to health problems or just something bad happened that they either even old age or death. And in the early days, they were fighting so hard. Man, they were fighting hard. And, I mean, to think that Martin Luther King, he didn't have a Cadillac driving him around and all the civil rights people marching. They weren't each one of them given a gold bullion to march up and down the street. No, they were being thrown rocks were being thrown at them. They were being cursed at. They're being told they were idiots and fools. Go home. They're being called nasty names that I would never pronounce. I would never say it. It was evil. It was terrible what was being done to those sweet people that did nothing wrong but have the color of skin that, for some reason, bothered people. I believe color is a rainbow. You know, there's every color in the rainbow has a meaning to me. Why let color make you angry at somebody? It should make you friends. I like that I've got friends of multiple colors. It doesn't matter what color they are. It matters the content in their heart and in their mind and body and soul. And that's why I'm saying, come on, guys. Come on, girls. Everybody, let's fight for our civil rights of independence, dreams, and inclusion of people with brain injury to live not just the American dream, the worldwide dream, of hope and prosperity and freedom for all. You know, I came on here tonight. I didn't think I was going to go. I told Craig I wasn't feeling good. It's amazing how when you just know that you've got to do your best even when you feel your worst, that you're going to do the best you can. I didn't think I could talk like this. I'm being honest. And I've had people sometimes say, are you really foolish enough to believe what you're saying? And I'll say, yeah, call me a fool. Call me one. But I dare you to follow us. There's a song, and Craig knows by now that I really love Paul McCartney. He's got a song that's called Follow Me. I want to say to everybody, follow me. Follow Craig. Follow all of us down this brain injury battlefield we've been. I guarantee it's going to lead to the promised land. It's going to lead to hope. It's going to lead to dignity. It's going to lead to freedom. It's going to be the freedom train to justice and end the tyranny of brain injury survivors going around the world. And if I sound like I'm getting fired up, it's because I'm thinking about people I know, just like the man's wife I was just visiting today. He passed 20 minutes after I left his house the other day. She told me that today. I visited with him, and I had to leave, and I was planning on coming back the next day. I got a call later on that night saying, Sam has passed. That was her husband's name, is Sam. I loved Mr. Sam is what everybody called him. He'd be riding around in his power chair, and his next-door neighbor has a little, I can't say what the dog is, cute little dog that loves him to death, and that little dog would come up to him and jump up in his lap, and I'd pat on the dog, and it always made him feel good. And his disability made him have a hard, hard life. But he would say, he called me Mr. Paul. He didn't say Les Paul. He said, Mr. Paul, he said, I want to tell you something. I may not make it to the end of the line, but keep on fighting for me. Keep on fighting for me. Well, Mr. Sam went on to heaven just a day and a half ago. In memory of him, fight for him. In memory of the people we know that have passed, fight for him. In our local support group, we've lost two people in 3 weeks. And it's hurt. We didn't hold our support group meeting because it was on one day after he passed, in honor of him and his wife and all the people that are in our group. We just decided not to hold the support group meeting, but we're going to do it next week in honor of his fight, because he was an injury survivor himself. His wife is a brain injury survivor. And she talked to me today, and she said, "Les Paul, I love you. Keep fighting the fight." And I said, "How can you even talk to me?" I just went and hugged her and said, "I love you, and you take good care of yourself." And her son was there, and family was there, and she looked so tired. Are you tired and weary tonight from your brain injury? Do you feel battered, torn, and ripped, like, you know, like the American flag did during the Revolutionary War? It was tattered and torn and about to fall apart, but they still carried it on. Even men with injuries that could barely limp and crawl. I tell you what, I promise you this, I'll do my very best, even if sometimes I do my very worst, to do whatever I can to continue with this fight and help others and all of us and Craig and all of us and all the hosts on Brain Injury Radio to see the promised land for people with traumatic brain injury and other disabilities, because it's really been on my mind the past couple of days, extra hard because of the people that I know that I've lost. And then I got thinking about, I've mentioned her name on here before, a lady named Peggy that I worked with who went to the White House and said, "We're tired of seeing people with disabilities treated so badly." And she said, "Les Paul, what are you going to do about it? Because I'm going to die one day." And yes, she did die. Her and my mother died in the hospital within 2 weeks of each other, and they were hospital apart. There's two hospitals that you can walk across from. She was in one, and the other, they're both in Augusta, Georgia. And I visited them both and brought them flowers and things during the last days of their life. It was about to make me crash. I could barely function. I was having the hardest time. I visit Peggy and my mother. This is how much they loved each other, Peggy and my mother. They would send handwritten messages for me to take to each other. And watching that, oh, God, it hurt, but it was also so beautiful to see people, two people who love one another, fighting to the last moment of their life to tell somebody they love them. How much do you love a brain injury survivor tonight? What congressman will you call tomorrow? What senator will you plead for to put more money into brain injury funding, but make sure it goes into the proper location and to the proper people? What will you do to help Brain Injury Radio expand and become bigger and stronger? What will you do, what will I do, to make sure we have a wonderful sponsor very soon for Brain Injury Radio? We need a sponsor, and I'm asking, if you're listening tonight, you might know somebody that is willing to help. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of money, and there's a lot of people with hardly any money. Let's fight, America. Let's fight the good fight, the winning battle. The winning battle is like those little stars I put on the picture, because you are a shining star. As a brain injury survivor, you can look at the bad things that happened in your life and you can lay there and cry over them for the rest of your life, or you can sit there and just mope and say, "I'm not going to do anything. I can't do anything. Oh my goodness, they told me I can't do anything. Y'all help. Dear God, I can't get up. What am I going to do?" Get up off your lazy self and fight. Breathe. Take in a breath. Take in a thought. It was so cold here today. I was outside walking my dog maybe an hour before the show began. I think it's 18 degrees outside, if I'm not mistaken. And I told this yesterday, but it was very cold then too. I could feel my brain injury in a way I've never explained before until maybe yesterday. After being outside for 5 minutes, because my dog just didn't feel good himself, I don't know why, he just kept having to stay out there and he wouldn't come in, my head started aching very bad where my brain injuries are and all where all the surgeries are. I could feel every mark of my head inside of my head. And it was, I said, "Bandit, come on, buddy, my head's starting to hurt. Ow." And by the time I got in, I had to sit down on my sofa and say, "Whoa, I'm wiped out." and just from the pain of my brain injury from the severe cold hitting my head, and it's been very windy. It's finally the wind was dying off when I came in the last time, but I'm still alive. I'm going to do everything I can possibly do, but I'm just one person, just as you're one person, just as each one of us listening is one person who can be a big voice. Excuse me, I'm about to cough. Got strangled there. But, you know, I've said a lot tonight, not even knowing for sure where I was going to go because I got feeling so bad. But I'm also feeling very inspired to be here tonight. It's an honor to be here. It's a privilege to be here. Brain Injury Radio is not just something we sit here and say, okay, cool, they got Brain Injury Radio. You know, that's awesome, and walk away from. It's a responsibility. I think it's something that we have a tendency to take life as just being, okay, blasé. I'll walk through it, and one day it'll be over. It's more complicated than that. We need to come together as a national community. We need to come together as a local community. We need to come together in support groups. We can go to our local brain injury support group if we have one in your town. You meet on Brain Injury Radio, and then those two work together, those two agencies. Then whatever other agencies deal with people with brain injuries and related disabilities, they should work together. And I personally believe we should form some type of a coalition and prepare to do that million-man brain injury, million-person, or multiple millions. It doesn't have to be 1 million. Let's go for it as big as possible. And people are saying, but I'm a brain injury survivor. How am I going to do that? I can do it. I challenge you to join me. I have my struggles. I have my days that I can't even get out of bed. I have days that my head hurts so bad that I feel like, wow, how am I going to live through the day? And then there's other days where I'm able to come on and talk after being feeling very bad. And then there's days when I just say, why this? You know? I just say, fight with all you've got. I mean, Justin Dart, he was a civil rights leader. He didn't believe in giving up. There's so many different civil rights leaders in the brain injury community and disability rights community that just didn't understand how to give up. I've got a friend. I'm trying to say his last name. His first name is Anthony, who wrote the article Learned Helplessness. And when he first talked to me about that, I went, wow, he's talking about what the world has learned. We're being taught that and being fed that daily to learn self-helplessness, not help self-help. We're being taught learned helplessness. The television comes on and talks to us all day. Television has a lot of good things on it. Don't get me wrong. I believe there's a time for television. But it can become a babysitter when you have a brain injury. It did for me for a long time. When I didn't want to live life, I'd just stare at the television, and it lived it for me. My mother would say so. She said, Les, get up off your butt, and you go live your life. That's all right. Star Trek's on or something. You know, just I'd see something. She said, Les. And at that time, I was 29. And she said, you're 29 years old. Don't you want to go on a date? And I said, nobody'd ever want to date me. I'm broken. She said, you say that again, young man, and I might really get mad. Don't you say that around me. I had a very positive mom, and she got mad at me when I said things like that, and we'd sometimes even argue about that. I said, why do you always not want to give up on me? She said, because I can't. I've seen it happen to people. She said, I know people who died because of it. I'm not going to let you do that. What are you willing to do to be a shining star? Just because you had a traumatic brain injury didn't mean to surrender life. Just because you were in a hospital or had a portion of your brain removed or had multiple operations, whatever it was. Maybe you were in a coma for a long time. maybe you're facing several operations. I don't know. That's where we need to come together as a community like never before. Am I talking a bunch of silliness? Do you guys think I'm talking serious? I'm being very serious. If you don't believe me, I really am. I know I can be a silly guy. I've been silly on here before. People know me. And I don't know. I get thinking about some of the people I know, just like the person who died. And it got me really serious. You know, if I was to die tonight and I looked down and saw myself in the last day of my life, I'd be thinking, you know, that guy, he didn't finish his mission. I'd be sad if I died right now for one simple reason. I feel like my mission is incomplete. I used to watch the television show Mission Impossible, and I watched the movie Mission Impossible. That's what we need to turn our life into, a Mission Impossible. You know, there is no impossible mission when you dare to dream. That's part of the reason why we named our support group Dreamcatchers, and why we carried it on to Brain Injury Radio. Be a dreamcatcher. In the Native American terms, the dreamcatcher filters out your bad dreams. And think about that. My mother told me I used to have really bad dreams and nightmares. I didn't remember them when I woke up, but I felt horrible. I don't have those anymore. I don't even remember my dreams most of the time. Maybe once every 6 months. But I used to be a very vivid dreamer. And I miss the dreams sometimes. Do you ever have a cool dream? I mean, I've had all kinds of crazy dreams. I love science fiction. I love all kinds of different movies and things. And some reason I'd watch a movie and I'd dream part of the movie before I knew it. But look at us. Look at this world and look at your life. Are you viewing the glass as always forever being half empty? Are you going to fill it up to the top until it runs over? That's how I want to see myself. I don't want to view myself as a half-empty glass. I want it to be half full and work on filling it up and work on building those dreams and us coming together as a team. Teamwork, teamwork, teamwork. You watch football players or baseball players in a winning team and you see a team that is working very hard, appear effortless to win a game. I used to go watch the Atlanta Braves a lot. My brother and his son and I would always go watch the Atlanta Braves several times a year. And they were having just a terrible season. It seemed like they couldn't win anything. But then a few years later, it was just home run after home run after home run after home run, and it's like, wow, these guys are on fire. You're going to have days in your life where you feel like you just can't do anything right. I got my hand up, waving it right now. If I had a camera and you'd see me, I'm literally waving my hand like, I've done that. Been there, done that. I've been in the pity party. As many friends of mine said, they had a pity party. And where it's like, well, come on over, all my lowly friends. We're going to have a pity party tonight. Join me, because I don't feel like being happy or excited, and I feel lowly right now. I've been there. Have you? But if you dare to seek your independence, if you challenge yourself to stand up or sit up or just encourage other people or do whatever it takes to find what it is in life that you feel is missing, or when you had your brain injury, it feels like something's missing, keep going anyway. That doesn't mean you can't start something new. And I say this fairly often too, but it needs to be said virtually every time we're on the air. Just because we had a brain injury and just because our life is different and it's hard doesn't mean we're supposed to quit. Just because I had to struggle to come to the show tonight doesn't give me the right to say, well, I shouldn't call in. What if I wouldn't have called in tonight? I was feeling really bad before the show began. I had to pump myself up to get myself ready to talk. And I had a hard time doing it, but I did it anyway. There, it's not always an easy road, is it, everybody? It's very hard sometimes. Craig, it is, isn't it? I mean, you've had your struggles, haven't you? Every one of us. I would love to say, wow, it's a bed of roses. Every day is beautiful, y'all. Come on, everybody. It is just beautiful. Everything is perfect. Yeah, I win $1 million at the lottery every time I walk past it. I don't even have to put money in. And, you know, they throw roses at my feet when I walk into a department store, and they roll out a red carpet, and they say, hey, Les Paul, man, you're awesome. That Brandon Drew really makes you special and very unique. We think you are cool. And, by the way, we want to hire you, but we don't need you to work because you get so much money you don't need to do anything. Ah, that's my perfect world. Not really. That's an insane world. It is really, I think, our struggles define us. Because it's hard, it becomes easy. Because it's hard, when I say that, you might say, how is it easy because it's hard? That don't make sense. You sound stupid, Les. Maybe that does sound stupid. But what I mean is, it becomes easier to find out the new things that you can do when it's so hard to do other things because you start doing things you didn't think you were capable of. I do several things now on my job, and when I say my job, I know there's a lot of brain injury survivors that do not have a paying job. I do have one, and I know that. So if it makes you feel bad when I say I have a paying job, it was a long, hard road to get to that. It was not easy, and I was turned down by everybody. I was just repeatedly turned down. Mr. Morgan, your disability's too severe. You could never work. Don't be silly. Go home. And, by the way, these were the experts. These were the spurts, I guess I'd call them, the people who are supposed to know how to help you with your disability. These were the agencies that I call the medical model. Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Morgan. We will have you come into the office tomorrow. And so, let's see. No, you have this problem? No, you can't come in. I'm sorry. We think you should go home. And I come back again. Mr. Morgan, we told you not to come back. It's too dangerous for you to try to come in here. And this is a place that trains you to work after you've had a brain injury or any disability. And I'm saying, but your job title says that you're here for people with disabilities. I have a disability. I'm asking you. I come in here dressed nice. I drove my own car here. And I'm asking for employment. What is it? And I get mad at him. I got mad. And I got in the guy's face because he said, Mr. Morgan, go home. You're going to get hurt. I said, the only thing that's getting hurt is my feelings to know that a man like you exists to put a man like me down when there's a man right here that you could train to do a job of some type because you work with people with disabilities, and yet you're telling me to go home and live in poverty for the rest of my life and surrender and die. He said, that's your words. I said, no, that's your words, because you just won't get the nerve to say what you're really saying to me. And I said, that's a load of you know what. You know, it's horrible when somebody does that. There are people out there that really think that in the disability community and their so-called leaders, we need to get them to retire, go away, whatever. And the people with the disabilities need to step up and become the disability leaders and directors and experts, because we are the experts in the field because we have it. We live with it daily. We wake up every morning and go to bed every night wearing it. I can't take my brain injury off. I can't grow a new portion of my brain. It's gone. It's been removed. I literally had a portion of my brain removed. I can't super glue it back in my head. It's missing. Missing in action. I don't even care anymore. I'm glad it's gone. And if it wasn't meant to be there, it wasn't meant to be there. So what? Next. Then next means life. Next means no more surrender. I'm not holding my white flag of surrender. I'm holding a flag of peace, love, and kindness out to the world, saying, you guys, rock and roll. You guys, lock and load. Lock and load. Who said that? Where'd that come from? What I mean is, be armed your abilities. Be armed with the belief that you have something that people want and something that people need, and that there are people out there that know for a fact that you can do something. And let me tell you, there are people out there in the disability community that want you to win and will be proud for you to win, and they will be clapping their hands every inch of the way. I'll just give an example. I received a flyer from a lady named Patty Goolsby today for our Augusta Brain Injury Support Group, which is next Thursday in Augusta, Georgia. And she wanted to talk to me today, and I didn't get to speak to her, but I was reading the flyer, and she said, let's get ready and get ready for our March Brain Injury Awareness Walk in Augusta. I say we should make March or some month close to it something even bigger than that on a national level. And we can get the Brain Injury Associations and Brain Injury Radio and any other related organizations involved if we want. Or we can just figure out whatever it takes from now till then and make it happen. It's time to stop waiting and playing the waiting game. The future is now. The present is here. My life is going to end one day, and I don't want to be dead in the ground and never see this happen. I don't want to see you die. I don't want to see people fade away and feel forgotten and left behind. I don't want to see people anymore take, I can't make it anymore. No one will reach out to me. We got to reach out to each other. We got to be kind. We got to do it in powerful ways, though. People are probably out there saying right now, some of them saying, a million people, you crazy? There are millions of people with brain injuries, millions and millions all over the United States. There are millions with aneurysms all over the United States. Don't tell me we can't do it. We put man on the moon. I talked about that earlier. We built space shuttles. Let's put a project in a big order, make something really big happen, get our country involved, and make it a national get the momentum going and make it happen. Make it happen, not just to force it to happen, because you know it should happen. Don't you know it should happen, you guys? I know it should. I'm absolutely positive that if we don't do it, time is going to slip away and more disability rights people will die. We'll have more people saying, well, it was nice knowing Sarah. It was nice knowing John. It was nice knowing Steve. It was, you know, that Les Ball guy was pretty nice. He sure had some big dreams. Now, Kim Justice, well, she had a bunch of dreams. All those Brain Injury Radio hosts, you know, they grew old and died and nothing ever happened. Do you really want to see that happen? Or do we want to get up off our butts and make it happen? It takes getting very, very serious, and I am being very, very serious right now, to say, okay, world, what's it going to take for us to turn the television off for a while or stop worrying about what's going on tomorrow with somebody else or getting in somebody else's news and seeing what we can do to come together as a team, the ultimate team, the dream team, and make this happen? Because I want to see it happen so darn bad. Am I being crazy, Craig? Are you still out there? Can you hear me? What do you think about this, if you're listening? I thought you might be on the phone.
I'm on the phone. I don't know if I'm live.
You are. You are.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm listening. I'm actually... Do you hear any delay? You hear any... how's that? Echo?
No, not at all.
Yeah, because I'm actually listening to you on the chat, the new chat. And I'm talking to you on the phone, and there's no echo, which is interesting.
That is cool. I noticed that. I decided in the past few days that I'm going to make it my mantra. That's the word I was looking for. My mantra and my whatever it takes in my life, if I don't see it, I'm going to be really upset. And when I die, looking down from heaven saying, I can't believe it, dadgummit. Give me another chance. I got to do something to get this right, because it ain't right. There's too many people I've watched die that wanted to see what we're talking about and what I was talking about tonight happen. But what you've often said, what are we willing to surrender? What is it we're willing to give up? I mean, we've got it too easy but too hard at the same time. People say, I don't have the money, I can't afford it. And I know a lot of people can't afford a lot of things, but then people will go out to a movie and see something But you can save your change here, there, and everywhere. We can come together in the community, maybe get somebody to I'm trying to think of it like when another person can't afford, maybe somebody else will pay their way. You know, whatever it takes. Do it fundraisers to get it to go. Get church organizations involved. I would like to see something really big happen. Tell me I'm crazy. What do you think?
Well, I think it's possible, but you're crazy too. But that's okay.
Well, that's true. I'm crazy. I am.
We're all a little crazy.
It takes being a little crazy like a fox. I had to add that part. to get the world to really realize we're not playing. I'm not playing a bit tonight. I know I laugh and act silly and make crazy voices sometimes. My voice cracked when I did that time. Tried to say voices. But I'm being serious as heck. I got thinking about my friend that passed away and then talked to his wife, and I said, oh, my goodness, another one lost before they saw the other side of survivors really paying it forward, survivors really moving ahead and stepping out and knocking a home run one after the other. And it, be honest, it hurt when I said that to myself when I got in the car. I had tears in my eyes when I got in the car and drove away, feeling her pain of her loss of her husband and how much he cared about people with disabilities in the community. He loved to talk to me. He'd say, Les Paul, he said, you are a dreamer, aren't you? I said, I am for sure. He said, I am too. Don't you ever stop. He said that to me last week. He said, don't you ever stop. And now he's gone.
How old was he?
He was 69 years old. But
he saw change.
Huh? He saw change for sure. He saw a lot of changes, but he also saw a lot of things that were still the same. And what he told me is he said, it seems like we fought the fight really hard during the civil rights movement, and then all of a sudden we stopped, took a long pause, and things started going backwards, and then it started going forward, and then it started zigzagging both ways. And he said, we got to do something about it. And finally his life came to an end. And his wife, though, spoke to me today, and she said, we're going to see change happen. She said, as soon as I'm over all of this right now, I said, don't you even be thinking about it. Her name is Edna. She said, I'm going to be back, and we're going to do things with our support group. We're going to do whatever we can do in the community to make sure things are right again, and that they're stronger and they're better, that the ADA is stronger, that a brain injury a radio is stronger, because brain injury radio means a lot, not just to me. I think it means a lot to a lot of people. Craig, you came up with such a fantastic idea. I can't say thank you enough. I don't know how to even say it properly.
I don't know who came up with the idea. I think it was in the 80s somebody figured to communicate. Come on, Seattle, come on. My dog wants out. Somebody in the late 1800s figured out how to communicate through the radio.
Yeah, but nobody ever thought to build this platform with all the imperfections in it. It's all we got. Someday somebody's going to build the first starship, if it isn't in existence hiding already, and say, man, how are we going to make this rickety thing happen to cross the universe? You know, I see it kind of like that. We're on a mission. I did a show a while back called What's Your Mission Statement? Thought about your entire life. What is your mission statement for your life? That's kind of what I'm talking about. Is it just to live life and drag along through? Or is it to help others and help yourself at the same time by helping others? One thing I've learned myself, one of the best help tools I've ever learned from, which is peer-to-peer support, whatever you want to call it, is helping someone else when you're not even thinking about helping yourself. It is almost an automatic. It's not an intentional thing. You're not going after gratification for yourself. You see someone else in need that has a situation worse off than you, and you want to help them. And before long, you start realizing, wow, I didn't realize I thought of things like this. I didn't used to talk like I'm talking right now. I was far from it. I guess I could say I was selfish. I thought about what I wanted to do, what I'm going to do, What am I going to do the rest of my life? What am I going to do for the rest of my life? How am I going to help me, better me? I didn't realize it, but I was on the path. Yeah. I was saying me, 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 and didn't realize it. I liked helping people. I had friends with disabilities, but they weren't close friends. I hung out with some people with disabilities when I was a teenager, and I really liked them, but I didn't really realize what they were going through. I realized I was being selfish back then. And I want us all to just become together as one. I don't even like brain injury being our label. I don't like spinal cord injury being someone's label. I just like us being known as people by our names. But if we have to wear some title, it needs to be changed in a way where it has dignity in it. Because a long time ago, the word disability became disassociated, dislocated, disappropriate. You know, diss my life. Stop dissing people with abilities. That's how I say it. Stop dissing my abilities. You know, use the slang for it. Disability. Go ahead.
In the last 30 years, the movement has fought so hard to label itself for services that have deemed them incompetent. You know, which is scary. You know, we were talking about this in our classic winter quarter, and people are deemed incompetent when they get services in most states. And once you're deemed incompetent, you're not eligible to be married. If you do get married and have a kid by chance, they take your kid away. And so the services they're fighting so hard to get is proving through legal means that they're incompetent. And so when times get tough, what happens to incompetent people?
Yeah,
that's what happened in the 1800s when they call it the rise of the institutions. And, you know, they're reopening seven institutions around the nation that
see
were previously closed.
You see what I mean? If we don't build this up stronger and faster than we're doing now, they're opening up what doesn't need to exist. They're going to go
now
back to the old.
Mental health issues. They're proclaiming, you know, mentally unstable. Yeah. So they're just another label.
Yeah, it really is. Say that again.
Before and after my injury, many times in my life.
How many people on this earth that aren't labeled with disabled that you couldn't say the same statement to, though? You might say it to a doctor who is a practicing professional right now that, wow, this guy's unstable. I don't know if I want to see him. You might say it to someone who's a lawyer because he blows his top all the time and curses at his workers and is just mean. I mean, they want to attach it to people with brain injuries and all kinds of different disabilities, but it's really it's a me and I and you thing. It's every one of us. It's not us or them. It's all of us. We need to work as one, become one. If you're a brain injury survivor, find out a way to make friends with people who aren't brain injury survivors. Get them on your side and vice versa. Become part of the community and be visible. We talk about it where I work at Walton Options all the time. We need to make it more visible by people seeing. We want the windows open all the time and people seeing people with disabilities working. And the thing I really love is when we go out in the community, like I work with a guy that is a spinal cord injury survivor, and they're expecting me to be his caregiver, and I come out and he rolls off of his ramp, off of his van, and goes in and he asks me to do some measurements, but I'm working for him when we're doing it. And we go to this house, and this young lady's in there, and she says, "Oh, my God, I've never seen this before. I want one of those." And she acted like an angel came from heaven when she saw him because he comes in the house. And she's saying, "Well, who's telling you what to do?" He said, "I'm telling me what to do. I'm self-directed." That's what we talk about in independent living. Is one of the main things we talk about is living a self-directed life. We, as a person with a disability, it's like we turn our lives over to every agency, every government entity, everything that isn't a civil right, everything that it's almost like communism. It's like we give up our life to the government or to some agency. You're a person in control of your own destiny and independent living. Or if you just decide you want to do something and become an entrepreneur, you go for it. And when you come into our office, you'll see some people in there knitting sometimes. You'll see some, we've got a couple of, I remember you were talking about it yourself, the ones that you have, I forgot what you called them the other night, Craig. But we have a lady with the Wounded Warriors, Kinga, who's actually been a guest on one of my shows, and she's training for the World Paralympics. Is it Paralympics? I don't know if it's Paralympics. What is it? In Beijing, China, whatever it's called. And as a person with a brain injury. I mean, people with brain injuries and other disabilities can really do big things. We let that label become our life. I'm not going to do that anymore. And yes, I've had many people tell me I'm foolish for trying so hard. I've also proven many of them wrong. Many of them wrong. Are you guys willing to try that? Are any of you listening willing to say, I'll raise my hand, I'll raise my flag, I'll step up to the plate, I'll volunteer, I'll call in on the, I can't say it right now, on the peer line and help out with other survivors who are in need of a call to talk to someone? Is there some way that I'd be willing to help somebody? This isn't just for fun, but, and this might sound strange, it is fun after you get to know people. I've really got to have a wonderful time getting to know Craig, getting to know every single one of the hosts on Brain Injury Radio, getting to meet and talk to people I never would have had the opportunity to meet unless it's just by chance. You might remember the name Deborah Schlag. She was a guest on one of my shows. She actually visited my office today, and she stopped in to see me and my supervisor, Cindy. And I didn't know she was coming. She called, or yesterday she called and said she was coming, and we spent some time with her. And it was wonderful. She's a brain injury survivor, and she was talking about her center for healing that she's working on. And at one time she had talked about being a host, and I'm telling this to you, Craig, because of what she said today. She said, don't think I have forgotten about that if the opportunity ever comes available or still is available, but she's been working on that so hard, and it's a lot harder than she thought, that it's taken a lot of their time. I met her husband, too, today. And so there are a lot of people out there working with brain injuries on things that you may never see unless you hear it on Brain Injury Radio that are really pretty cool. A center for healing. I would want to see what that's like.
She's also one of our volunteers on the peer line.
I thought so.
She does what she can. She's a wonderful little woman. And I can't remember, one of our hosts interviewed her. I think it was Kim. I don't remember, though.
Oh, I interviewed her one time.
I can't remember who interviewed her. I know I didn't. I've known her for a long time, but yeah, a lot of folks I've interviewed, years ago. But yeah, I've just known her. There's a few people like that that are marvelous people that we need to pull back into the overall community, because when we're out of touch, that's when we lose. We need to keep in touch and learn from one another constantly.
When you said that about the community. Today, I keep forgetting if it was today or yesterday. I've lost track of today and yesterday somehow. When I was talking to her, she was saying, Les Paul, she said, the journey I got to go on selling my book, and she said, not really selling my book, but showing my book to people and telling them what it was about. Because she said, to be honest, it turned out to be a journey for me more than anything. I didn't mean it to be. I was trying to figure out a way to write a book. And she said when she wrote it, she discovered a lot about herself. Then she goes to all these brain injury associations all over the place, and she went all over Raleigh, North Carolina, then all over North Carolina, several locations, and South Carolina and Georgia, and I don't know where else she went, but she went a lot of places. And she was telling me, she said, when I started meeting so many people, she said, my goodness, there are so many hurting people. She was telling me this just recently. She was saying there are so many hurting people, it scares me to think that there's this many people not getting services, not enough this or not enough that, or just enough to just barely get by or get you off of your disability benefits, or say someone is out of work and they've got no money, you get a little tiny bit of this and a little bit of that, but nothing, she said, for the great number of them that really want to go back to work to try to help them go back to work, unless it's peace work. I mean, who wants to do peace work if it pays pennies on the dollar instead of giving a real job and a real earnings for something? There has to be something better. I know Craig has talked about it, some other groups that actually do employ and do pay money. And we were talking about it some last night that, you know, there's too many jobs that it is peace good kind of money, a buck here, a buck there. A lot of people are high-level, high-function people that just happen to have some idiosyncrasies in their life. Would you say you have any, Craig? I know I do. I know I do. And
I don't think I don't have any. I mean, I don't breathe without something.
That's what I mean. I'm just tired of seeing so many people. And because I work at a Center for Independent Living in two different locations, three different locations, actually. We have one that's 100 miles from the other two. But I've been to all three of them, but I go back and forth to the Aiken one and the Augusta one a lot. I meet a lot of people with disabilities. And because they know I'm involved with the brain injury support group, I walk into the Augusta one. And they said, last fall, you missed so-and-so. And I said, what are you talking about? Because I work in our North Augusta one, which is only a couple miles from the other one, the most. And they said, somebody was looking for you. And I said, who? And here comes a lady, and she says, Les Paul, they said I need to speak to you. And she acted like I was King Tut. And I'm thinking, well, what is it? She said, they told me I could talk to you, and you work with people with brain injuries. Please help me. And I said, oh, boy. I said, and she was just talking. She was so happy to meet another survivor that is actually working that she had tears running down her face. I'm saying, I'm sorry, what's going on? It made me feel bad to see her start crying. She just, tears just ran down her face. And she said, I've never met another survivor that's working. She said, I haven't worked in years. How did you do it? I said, to be honest, I don't know if I could draw a map out to explain my life, because I was thought of as broken material, damaged goods, the kind that you might throw out. I was left to be pretty much like a non-existent person after I recovered enough to keep breathing, to keep eating, but not knowing where I was at, not knowing how to function, being trained no skills to help me get better, and sent home saying, your son will never do anything, and he surely won't recover anymore. He ought to be kept in a high-level nursing home, is what I told my mother. And my mother said, no! You're not going to do that. My boy, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Mrs. Morgan, you're getting old, and your husband's even older. You shouldn't do that. Put him in there. And they were trying to get her to take me to one. So glad she didn't. A year later, I was still fairly functional. I could talk. I could walk with a very bad limp. I had no computer. I didn't have any friends, it felt like. I was very dark and lonely inside. Felt like I was trapped in a box. It was like I was put in a dark room and water pouring on my body and cold in a desolate nowhere in a deep fog. My memory was a fog. My mother would be talking to me. I wouldn't know what she was saying. My brother Phil would come in and start telling me jokes, and I'd try to laugh, but I couldn't remember the punchline. And I'd just sit there and cry because I didn't even want to be alive. My life was so messed up. And yet I'm here right now saying I've made it to the other side of a lot of that. I still suffer a lot of struggles. I still have a hard time. I still have a hard time getting out of bed sometimes. I wake up with a monstrous migraine, and it feels like I'm lifting 10 anvils on my head. It didn't say I can give up. Are you going to give up? Are you going to call in? And by the way, what is the call-in number, Craig? I don't.
Whatever you want it to be. If you want to call in toll-free, it's 855-473-3711. The old number works. The new numbers work. All the numbers works right now.
Okay,
so,
I didn't know that number. Okay. I just noticed I don't see it on the screen on this one. But I like this one. This is plain and simple to the point.
Yeah, I'm playing. Well, for tomorrow's show, I'll put it on. I'm going to add smileys. I'm going to add moderation. We're going to try a few different things. This is pretty much public thing that you can do, but we'll have the advanced one, you know, we'll use, but I'm just playing with different widgets right now, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, but if you look at it, if everybody scrolls down, you'll see the Blog Talk Radio, but if you scroll down even farther, you'll see the Shoutcast streamer. So, you know, so wherever we stream from, it'll play on this page.
On this very page? I haven't looked down, so. Okay.
Archives are right there, and I'll put a new archive page up. When hosts log in, their control panel, they'll have a little different screen that'll scooch over a little bit, and their control panel will be on the screen too.
Well,
for calls.
Well, for the past several months of having so many problems just getting on sometimes with Blog Talk, this has been so much easier than just signing on to that every time. I mean, I can't say how many times I didn't get through, or it said, "We're sorry," and hang up when I was dialing in. There's probably been 30 times since I first started that when I called in, all of a sudden it says, "Goodbye." Oh, boy. And I dialed the right number and everything. Call back in, and then beep, 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 beep. Oh, boy, we're busy. Okay, I'm calling back again. And somehow finally get through by the hair of my chinny chin chin.
And you know, people with new computers, they're having problems because Blog Talk's now considered a threat. So many viruses have been contracted on Blog Talk.
They
attacked them. Yeah, I mean, we've had complaints when they're having the things over the holidays, a couple more people, you know, here, click here to fix it. Somehow they got the pop-up up there and they downloaded some virus out of, and the sad thing is, it's out of the United States. They're able to track it. They don't know who, but I hope they find these people.
That's a shame. It's just so much a shame that people just want to do bad. There's a lot of people that just want to do bad for the fun of it, the giggle of it, and just the evil of it, really, when somebody's trying to help people that really need help. I'm noticing...
Attacking us specifically. They were attacking just anybody that seemed like corporate America, I'm guessing. I'm guessing it was an unemployed computer person somewhere that's angry and had nothing better to do, and this seemed like the thing to do. Maybe he applied for a job with them, and he didn't get. Who knows?
Okay, I see what you mean.
I don't take it personal because when they call up and do their weird stuff, they're not. It's not personal. They're trying to reach out to anybody.
And that is true. Sometimes it might even be a survivor. This yelling anybody out there, I'm going to fire whatever I can, even if it sounds weird to you. You never know. I don't know what I would have done if I had known more about technology back in those days. People might not have liked what I would have put out there. Makes me wonder. Because that road of recovery is long, winding, and different for everybody. That's one thing that's so different about brain injury than other disabilities, that you can have 1,000 people with a very similar brain injury who had 1,000 different outcomes. There might be some similarities, and then there'll be something that's very different. One might be very angry. One might be very happy. One might have too much energy. The next might be fatigued. The other might be blind in one or both eyes. The other might be totally feeling like, wow, I got out of this with no problems at all. Only been a month, and I'm back to normal. And the next person, 10 years later, is still struggling. And that's why if somebody says, I don't get you guys with brain injuries, you girls with brain injuries, I don't understand why you complain so much, just because they don't have a clue. And that's why we've got to continue teaching, advocating, preaching to them about the good news of hope after brain injury, that there is hope. And I'm going to say the hope part over and over and over, because I know there's someone listening to me that might even be mad enough to hang up. How many times is he going to tell that lie again? Because that would have been me a long time ago. I would just say, you're lying. How can you be happy after that? That's insane. They really did all that stuff, or are you just making that up? No, they really did it all. And it hurt like crazy. And I didn't want to make it out of it. If it wasn't for my family members and friends, I would have totally given up. I wanted to give up. I was so mad at my family because they didn't want me to surrender. I said, please, leave me alone. I hurt so bad I want to die. All I could think of is this is the most extreme pain so far beyond anything I could ever imagine in existence, that it being gone would be the answer. I didn't know it was the answer, the pain, because it taught me endurance at my very weakest. When I was at my lowest, I had people talking to me saying, Les Paul, you might not believe in yourself, but I will not give up on you. You're not allowed to give up on yourself. And those very people stay in my heart today, because I don't know how I outlived so many people that were there for me. A great number, and I mean probably 30 to 50, somewhere in that area, of people who are friends, caregivers, people who just love me as friends, and some people I've just known for a long time have passed, some of them young, some in their 20s, some in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and some in their 70s and 80s who were aunts and uncles. My Aunt Pearl and my Uncle Max. My Uncle Max had a visual impairment, and he couldn't see anything directly in front of him, but he loved me. I don't talk about Max Newman very much, but he was an awesome guy. He lived in Ohio, in a town called Alliance, Ohio, him and my Aunt Pearl. And my mother and I would often go visit them in the summertime. And my Uncle Max, I learned a lot from him, because he'd say, Les Paul, do you see what I see? And I say, well, what do you mean? Because you can't see directly in front of you. He could only see out of either side of his eye. He couldn't see directly in front of him. I think it was a problem with the cornea, if I'm remembering correctly. But I had a bicycle, a 10-speed bicycle back then that I rode around the neighborhood and things just for the heck of it. And he said, you know what, I can still ride a bike. I said, I don't know if you should do that if you can't see. He said, I can see out of both sides. He said, I just got to be careful. I'll stay in the yard. And he'd ride around the yard. And he said, anybody can do anything. It just takes a way to define your challenge. He said, I'm not going to let my vision problem stop this. And I love my Uncle Max. He was an awesome guy. I can't believe I don't know if I've ever mentioned him on here. He was a wonderful guy. He worked very hard for many years. And he really cared a lot about me and my mother. And my Aunt Pearl, which was my mother's sister, they were 10 years apart. And we'd go visit them sometimes for a month. And that was one of the best times of my life, because I was away from my father, who had so many problems, and we'd have a lot of good times. And so Max Newman was an awesome, awesome friend, but he died, and my Aunt Pearl died. And I love those two to death. I can still see their front yard. I would go and cut their yard for them when I was there. I'd do anything I could just because I love to be around them. They're just so positive and kind to me and my mother that I just enjoy being around them. And yet, I outlived those two. And I outlived a lot of young people that I knew. I remember a friend that I had who had the same name as you, Craig, died in his 20s. And, gosh, he had a hard road. When I was in my 30s, he was in his 20s. I guess I was about 7 or 8 years older than him. And his life just seemed like one thing after another hard would fall on him. We actually both got to go to Augusta National to the Masters Golf Tournament together when I worked for Lowe's Corporation. I worked at Lowe's Building Supply at the time. And his father was the manager of the store. And he says, hey, Les Paul, here's two tickets for you and Craig. I said, two tickets for what? He said, the Masters. I said, are you serious? Those are expensive tickets, by the way. people travel from all over the world to go see the Masters, and it's in Augusta, Georgia, just across the river from me. And so I'm like, wow, I'm getting to go to the Masters, excited. And so Craig, which was his son, he and I both went to the Augusta National, and we saw the CBS News television crew out there, and they were setting everything up, and it was, we were at the actual game. We weren't just at the practice rounds. This was the game. And I didn't realize what a nerd he was. We were both young, but I didn't think he'd see the CBS News cameras and start screaming, "Hey, man, I'm over here," and start waving to just to joke and cut up. He caused us to have to leave, and I said, "Man, please stop that. What's wrong with you?" And he was cutting up, being silly. I didn't know that he died at a young age, though. The guy, he was always just cutting up. But
having a good time, enjoying life as you make it.
Yeah, I think about him often, because one day, and it was not long before he passed, I was driving on a road in here in my hometown. I saw him, and I said, "Wait a second, I haven't seen him in a couple of years," and he looked rough, and he's feeling bad. And I actually picked him up where he was walking alongside a road beside a shopping center. And I said, "Craig, what is going on? Why are you walking over here? Where's your car?" It's a long story. And he's talking to me. He said, "How did you make it out of your brain injury? How did you get where you can function?" He said, "I was there when you were in the hospital." He said, "I can't believe you're even talking." He said, "I was there when you're in the coma." He said, "Man, they were saying you're going to die. I don't know how you made it." And he said, "Look at me. I'm a mess." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Everything I do, I've screwed up." I said, "Really?" I said, "You know, you've got a chance to do something about that." He said, "No, I've messed my life up so bad that I don't know what I'm going to do." He said, "It's so nice to see you." And I took him. He was actually staying at an apartment complex just a couple miles away, so I gave him a ride over there, and we talked for about an hour. I didn't know it. The young guy was going to die soon after from a massive heart attack. In his 20s, a guy I went to school with and knew since I was very young. And I outlived him. Me being the brain injury survivor and all this stuff I had happen, why'd he die at such a young age and I keep going with all this crazy stuff that happened to me? So it hasn't been easy. I think about him sometimes. I know his brother. And his brother said, "I don't know what happened to Craig. It's just a sad story." I've known a lot of people that have passed, and the day before, they were fine. I said about my own brother Phil so many times, I'm not going to say much about it other than live your life today like it is your last day, but don't think of it that way. Just live your life as you need to live it, because it could go at any minute. You never know. I mean, someone might slam into a home and hit you with their car. I've seen it happen. I haven't said this about what my father did before, I don't believe. He actually borrowed my car when he was very, very bad off in his health, and I was gone. He somehow got a hold of my car and drove it through someone else's house because he was very mentally unstable, and he got the keys, and he drove it into someone's house while I was gone, when we had to literally leave because he became so violent. And I mean, it did a lot of damage to this house. He lost control of my own car and drove it through somebody's house. And nobody ever told me. When I came home, I asked my brother, "Phil, where's my car?" I said, "Well, I've got to tell you something, Les." I said, "What is it?" And he said, "Don't go look at your car," because I had a beautiful car. It was a 76 Malibu Classic that I had fixed up, put mag wheels on it, had it totally repainted. It looked brand new. It was beautiful. I made it look like an older style sports car. And I looked at it, and the front end of it was crushed in. It was all beat up. It looked like somebody had taken a hammer to my car. Man, my heart just sunk, and I felt like I fell through the earth. And I'm saying, "Phil, what happened?" He said, "I couldn't tell you with all the stuff going on with Dad, with all the things going on in your life, with you having aneurysms and brain injuries, I couldn't tell you. And with Dad being in the hospital and being very ill, I just couldn't tell you. And I wanted to beat my brother up. I was so mad. I said, you couldn't keep him from driving my car. He said, no, I couldn't. I'm sorry. And so that was another ding in my chest, but I'm still here. Life doesn't always come out a bed of roses, because a bed of roses has thorns. And I'm saying that because I'm not going to tell you life is going to be easy. I'm not going to tell you brain injury is easy, because it's not. A lot of people didn't survive it. A lot of people aren't going to make it. But the ones who are the ones who are going to keep fighting to the very last breath. We've got to. We don't got to. We get to. We have an opportunity for real change. We need to stand in front of the White House and circle it. We need to stand in front of every state capitol and stay there and do a sit-in, do a march-in, not be afraid of being arrested. When the civil rights battles were being fought, many people were arrested. But in the end, they won, and those people were let out. And their charges were removed because they knew it was wrong in the first place to do people the way they were treated. It was not an easy road.
People with disabilities used to do that in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yes. I mean,
they were so desperate that they had to.
And you said it yourself, that it's like we've lost the taste for the fight. I mean, how would you say it? I don't want to steal your words and try to say them wrong. You say it.
I don't remember my words. We've lost the oomph, the passion, because we were motivated by desperation.
Yeah.
Now we're not desperate enough. You know, we're not being abused and killed yet. I mean, it seems that we won't let up. And the government, you know, you look at them. They take all of our what could be leaders and turn them into meeting goers and puppets, basically, a lot of times.
You're right. I mean, for the most part, America, a lot of people say, man, I'm so poor, I don't have anything. I've only got one widescreen TV, and I've only got two telephones. One's a cell phone, one's a regular phone. But I ain't got money to buy groceries. But me and my buddies are going to go out and see a movie tonight. It's become death by a million cuts. We haven't thought for a long time, what if you didn't have heat tonight? Man, if I didn't have heat tonight in my house, I'd be cold as heck. I'd be searching for some emergency protocol right there. I'd be trying to find out, okay, my heater's broken. And what if there's nobody willing to repair? I'm sorry, Mr. Morgan, we won't do it. I'd have to go find a place to stay, and I'd be motivated. And because the way the world is now, well, some agency's going to give you a check. Some agency's going to give you just enough disability where you're going to say, well, I'll have enough to make it maybe 3 weeks out of the month. And then from there, I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll borrow some money. Maybe somebody will loan me some money to make it a few more days, because I might even have my electricity cut off. I might even have my cable cut off or something. You know, I might have to pay my bill late to make it. But it's taught in our minds that we can make it on this scrappy, broken system, and we can cope with it and accept it when it's hell on earth, when it's evil, when it's wrong, when it's injustice, when it's tyranny. It's the wrong thing for Americans with disabilities to be sitting at home right now saying, I've got enough, everything's just right. And if that's how you feel about it, more power to you. If you don't feel like you should fight for your rights, don't. But I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to quit. I hope you won't either, whoever you are.
So, Les Paul, you know how to read?
Yes.
Imagine that. So do you know how to write?
Yes.
Oh, man, you can read and write? My God. And I'm being real serious that our youth, our young, the students, once they've been labeled as a disability and they go into a designed instruction class, say via high school, guess what they stop teaching them?
Reading and writing?
Reading and writing.
Really?
I have a kid. Oh yeah, I one of my assistants right now is brilliant. They stopped teaching him to read and write at, you know, in ninth grade,
wow.
And they started teaching him how to go apply for jobs, like at McDonald's and McDonald's, Walgreens, and then they started learning to volunteer.
Wow.
And so, and this kid has no, I don't know if you follow my post, but he has no ambition. He doesn't want to be stuck on his $710 a month. That's the magic number right now. But he's been so afraid to take a chance because he could lose that. Because not only has he learned to live on it, his mom, who supported him for a long time, also learned to live on it. And so we've enabled that entire family, and you know, all the kids are getting disability. And I'm telling you what, I don't see the disability. This kid's bright. The only disability he maybe had, he had too much energy. Who knows? they take the energy and they drug you up with Ritalin because you got to call it ADHD.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And you're dead on the money. I mean, it makes me want to scream out and say injustice and tyranny and a murder of the civil rights of Americans with disabilities, sometimes by the people with disabilities, by saying, why should I fight? I got it just good enough where I don't need to. You go fight what you want to. I'm afraid I'll lose this. You'll lose your poverty.
Well, they don't know how to fight. They're afraid.
I know.
Yeah, they're afraid to lose their poverty.
I know. Well, there are millions of people with disabilities living in poverty, at the poverty limit, or scrapping just barely above it. But there's millions living below the poverty limit in the United States of America.
Six out of 10 Americans are below poverty rate.
Isn't that disgusting? We talk about saving the world. We can't even save our own selves. 6 out of 10 is enough to make you want to go puke. Enough to make me want to go stand in front of the White House with a loudspeaker and get arrested and say, well, you know, I care about America. I care about Americans with disabilities greatly. I care about our great land that people fought and died to protect, and yet it seems like we're falling apart at the seams because people aren't standing up. And, you know, you look on television, the world's looking all right. We've got our local TV news. We've got movies. We've got a million channels on satellite, and we've got heaters, we've got air conditioners, we've got this, that. We've got all the luxuries. We can play our video games and ignore the world that's going on. I used to play video games a lot after I had my brain injury, after I finally came out of it about 5 or 6 or 7 years later, where I could play one. And
in your case, that was rehabilitation. That's good for you.
It really was. I didn't realize it, but it took me a long time playing video games. And, I mean, I used to play and play and play, and my mother said, are you ever going to get off your video game? Let's go eat somewhere. And then she said, you know what, I'm sorry I said that because you're finally doing something. But I wouldn't watch television. I'd just play video games because I couldn't understand the television. I couldn't understand when people were telling jokes. I was too late when the punchline came along. And I would go to parties and people would be laughing, and I'm thinking, are they laughing at me? What are they laughing about? I'd say to people I went with, what are they laughing about? And they said, don't you get it, Les? No. And then I'd start laughing, and everybody stopped when I figured it out. And they'd look at me like, he's weird. You know what I mean?
I'm afraid of TV.
Well, we probably all should be. There are some good things on it. I mean, like weather bulletins, when the weather's really bad, they can tell you approximately what the forecast is going to be, but they don't know if there's even going to be tomorrow. We don't know what the rest of the world is truly doing. The news media is part real and part fantasy. They'll tell some stories and they won't tell other ones. The bigger news is really hidden away. You don't know what's really going on. It's controlled to a degree.
Yeah, you need to look around the other rest of the world and see what they're reporting, and usually find out a lot that way.
I know it. It's just amazing. It's like a mind game they want to play on us and teach us to just fall in line. Dare to be different. Challenge yourself to get up tomorrow and start searching for some friends. Go on Facebook if you have the internet. or call somebody you haven't spoken to in a long time, whether they had a brain injury or not, and just say, hey, how are you doing? Talk to friends. If you're a survivor, you don't need to just hang out with brain injury survivors. You need to hang out with all kinds of people because life is a mix. It's just like I was talking about colors all earlier. All the colors of the world make it a better place. I don't care if it's red, black, yellow, blue, whatever. Color makes beauty. I mean, why pick on somebody because of their color? You know, why pick on somebody because they have a disability? Why pick on someone because they have a brain injury? Why pick on anybody? Why not go help somebody instead and find your true passion? And if that's not explaining what I'm talking about tonight, I can't even think of another way to say it better, because I tell you what, we really get an opportunity by being here tonight to share some things. And I'm going to open up some microphones and talk for a little while with some of the people. Kim, I want to bring you on for a little while. How are you doing tonight, Kim?
Hello, Les Paul. I'm doing
good.
How are you?
Oh, I'm all right.
There you go again. Your voices. I think you made a resolution for the new year. You know, you've been talking a lot more in foreign voices in the new year since you did before.
I know I have. I've had these little guys trapped in my head for all these years, and they got to come out. They're my little gremlins.
Well, we all have to act out somehow. I guess that's pretty harmless.
And you know, we were just talking about television. Well, I watched too much when I was a kid. I would sometimes watch Gomer Pyle, and I can't imitate him right now. I can't even remember how he talks, but he talked in that southern hillbilly funny voice he did. And I make some voices out of things he said. And then I'll say, hello, I'm very Mr. Sophisticated today. How are you doing? I just messed it up by getting tongue-tied. Chitty, old chap, how are you doing today? You know, just, I don't know, it's just whatever makes me silly enough. I tell people I'm seriously silly, and I really mean it. And you can take
you
that how you want to. Well, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you? I was just listening and getting reacquainted with someone I met before. You should try posting that chat again, and I'll try it again.
Oh, okay.
I had to close it. I tried, and I tried everything I could think of, but I was getting feedback whenever I clicked on that thing and went to it before I even signed in. I started getting the double feedback, and for some reason,
really? That
works for me like riding in a back seat. It's an instant trigger to a vertigo feeling that
and
makes me want
it. And it's just opposite for Craig and I.
I know. I don't know what it is. I wish I did, because I like that chat room mountains better than the one last
Facebook,
night.
If you click Facebook, I believe it. If you click Facebook, it'll go to it immediately, because I just posted it again on Facebook and a couple other, like Twitter and LinkedIn and Pinterest. Is that all right to do it that way, Craig? I'm just trying to make sure I'm doing it right so people can find it. Craig? Well, he might have left.
Are you talking about...
I muted myself, and you missed that. Yes, you're right.
Are you talking about your page?
Go to my Facebook page, I guess. And
okay.
Well, or will it be on Brain Injury Radio's Facebook page? I'm not sure which one I posted on just now.
Well, and if you just go to braininjuryradionetwork.org/live radio.
Could you simplify that?
I meant
so
to simplify
that are
it.
Listening.
Yeah, braininjuryradionetwork.org/live radio.
Okay.
And I'll make it simpler. Maybe I'll swap them out and make this braininjuryradio.com and then /live. Or maybe I can even make it birn.com/live. We can do whatever we want.
That's
I
right. Dadgummit. I'm looking right now at something that our friend Anthony that has come on our show several times. I was hoping he would be here tonight. I see I've got several windows open. Let me see, because I've got so many open myself. I'm trying to find and see if he's in here. Because, Kim, are you still there? I'm just going to open some other. Go ahead.
I am. Oh, look at you, so handsome in your suit. What the heck were you doing? Oh, and there you are with that goofy Craig looking cross-eyed.
What are you looking at?
You didn't know there were pictures of you floating around out there, did you, Craiger?
Oh, there's more stuff floating out about me than only half is true. It's up to you to figure out what half.
Well, I'm going to open up a couple of other mics while we're talking just because I see several other ones open. Here's the 765 area code. If you'd like to come on and speak, I'd just like to find out. 765, would you like to say anything on Brain Injury Radio? Okay, no, they're just listening. I'll close that one.
765, that's usually like Matt or what's that other guy's name?
Nobody
Brent?
Answered.
Yeah.
I would leave it open. I mean, he maybe don't.
Okay,
but,
I'll leave it open. Okay.
Well, he might also be doing something else.
Okay, I'm going to go to the 202 area code. 202, if you're listening to Brain Injury Radio, you're open now, and if you have something to say, say it.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Where have you been, Allie?
Happy New Year, guys!
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. Hi, Kim. Hi, Les Paul. And hi, Kim.
Hello.
Hello. And whoever else may be out there listening. And I'm glad to be here. You know, I'm actually multitasking, and I've got the television on mute. I'm on the laptop, and I'm tuned into the radio show, and I jotted down something that was really impactful that you shared, Les Paul. You said,
"Okay,
we don't get to." No, you said, "We don't got to. We get to."
Yes.
We have a real opportunity to change, and I'm gonna actually jot that down. I'm a quotesmith type gal, and I love the power
that stuck
of
with me when I started saying that. I'm just.
Yeah,
you know, when you've
really
got to do something, it's like, oh,
awesome.
God, I've got to do that again. Do I really have
mm-hmm.
to? Oh, man. No, I get
mm-hmm.
to. What an awesome opportunity it is to get up and get out of bed and get to go help someone and get to go serve your community and get to go to work and get to do something that's fun or even hard. I get the opportunity to go work really hard today and wear myself out and have a hard time sometimes because people don't understand me, because it gives the chance for someone to hear my voice, and hopefully they'll hear something that means something, and sometimes they'll laugh at me and make fun of me and keep going anyway. You know?
I guess
a basic way to say what I'm trying to say,
mm-hmm.
this is the biggest get real moment of my entire life, this show is right now. I'm being really serious
mm-hmm.
saying that, because when my friend passed and then another one passed 3 weeks earlier, it might not even be 3 weeks, it might be 2.5.
You had another friend make his transition? You had another friend to pass recently?
Yes. And I was thinking how they both always mm-hmm. loved being in our brain injury support group, and how they were always talking about, man, if we could just make it a little bit farther, we've still got such a long road, and now their road has ended. Or has it? They're on another journey now. I don't know. But all I know is we need to live in honor of them and fight in honor of the people who have passed, too. I mean, there's a lot of people who have died who fought so hard and almost made it, and then it fell backwards after they left. I know a person in my community that worked in the mental health field that was absolutely amazing. She was like a lightning rod. I mean, she did demonstrations in the community, and I was at one of her events, and it astonished me what she did, because she acted out in front of a large group of people what it's like to have her illness. She had what looked like a razor in her hand, started slitting her wrists. I'm going, oh, my God, I didn't expect to see that. And everybody going, and I'm like, oh, my God. She said, oh, it's okay. I do this all the time whenever I get
she
nervous or upset.
She was acting as though she was slitting her wrists.
She wasn't, for real. She said, but I have done this in my life, and I've nearly died. And so many of my friends have told me, why do you keep harming yourself? And she told me, I don't know. And she said, I don't understand it myself. She said, but I've been put on so many medications, and they keep cutting funds for mental health in our community. And she's also an advocate for horses and other animals, especially horses, though, for therapy. And she had programs get started, and now her health has gotten worse, and she's not involved as much, and so it's gone backwards. And it's things like that. I don't want to see things like that fall to the wayside anymore, because there really are some leaders out there that are struggling, too. If we had a few more leaders in each town, in every city, and a few more becomes a lot, and we have every state in the United States with a lot more leaders, and we all come together, we could really have people take notice. We need to do some really big, very bold things, and I believe in very bold things, and I'm not being silly. I know I can cut up and make silly noises, and I can laugh and be silly on here sometimes on purpose, but I'm being real serious tonight because we need to knock the ball out of the park. We need to set our destiny at and make ground zero, our ground zero, the playing field for people with disabilities, and to make sure that all the agencies and all the corporations and all the different whatever it is that has anything to do with people with brain injuries and other disabilities understand that when they start firing the shots, that we're going to come back and say whether it's right or wrong. We're going to hold people accountable that are causing people to either get worse off or pass away or to be ignored or to be pushed aside into society until they die and their life ends as if it never mattered when it really mattered and they're great people. I don't want to see people hurting anymore like that. I don't want to see people that I personally know that were great fighters, when something happens to them, nobody stands up for them. I want to see us be by the people, for the people, help the people, serve the people. I'm Survivor Nation. That's what we need to become, a Survivor Thriver Nation. And there are disability leaders all over this United States and all around the world, but there's a lot of people that could also help them or become want to start some other new program or new form of assistance that is sitting there and saying, you know, I could do that, but I don't know. Well, maybe one day. And then something happens to them, and then they're never heard of again. I mean, I have known a lot of disability leaders in person that I've met through working at Walton Options for several years that their health problems have caused them to die or become very ill. There was one dear lady, her name was Judy, that worked at Walton Options. She was there at the signing of the ADA into law. She was in Washington, D.C. Well, I think it was Washington, D.C. where it was signed into law. I'm forgetting. She talked to me, and I didn't know she was about to pass away. She was a wonderful lady. She said, Les Paul, I've got so much I want to share with you. I was getting to know her better and better, and her health was going down. I thought she had a long time left to live. Little did I know the very next day was the last day I'd ever speak to her because she passed the next day. And she was on a presidential committee for disability rights, and we lost a giant, and another one fell. It's like a tree falls in the forest. Will you hear it? Well, if enough trees are in the forest and enough people are walking around those trees and come out of the forest, that they're going to start hearing us. And if we start calling our congressmen, our senators, if we start getting into committees, we start getting into groups and believe that we're capable of doing more than we think we are. I'm not just saying this just to say it. I'm really not. If I sound like it, you can tell me. You can tell me off or tell me I'm stupid, whatever. But I hope you'll say, I'll join you. I am not the best person at everything. I can tell you there's a bunch of things I've failed at. My life is full of, like a plane diving into the ground head first, crashes. I have had many, many failures. But I don't believe in giving up because of that. Just because I've had failures does not mean I can't write really fast. Since my brain injury, I write slower. If I write fast, my spelling just jumps out the window. When I read a book, when I had my brain injury before then, I could just fly through books. I used to love to read. I mean, I would just read for hours sometimes. I rarely read unless it's something related to what we're doing here because it's a struggle. I don't read nearly as fast, and it frustrates me. It always has frustrated me since. So I had Dragon Naturally Speaking, for example, which is a program. It'll read things and documents, okay? And I like it to read to me because I can remember better after my injury from hearing something read to me rather than me read it, because I'll read half of a sentence and I'll say, wait a second, I forgot what the first paragraph was saying in that sentence. I mean, in that paragraph, And I go back and read it again, and I lose it again. Read it a third time, and I say, well, what's the use? I quit. And that sounds like I'm a quitter there. No, I just realize it'll take me a great deal of time. Find your occupation, as my supervisor calls it. And sometimes it's not your occupation. Create
like
your
that.
Occupation.
Yeah.
Cindy Anzik came up with that. She said it one day. I said, what? I heard her say it one day in a meeting we were at, and she said, Les Paul, you've never heard me say that? And I said, no. She said, maybe I'm saying it for the first time, and I say it to myself sometimes. She said, working at Walton Options for Independent Living, I'm living my dream and working my occupation. She said, meaning I'm not having to come here because I want to just drag into work and it's another minuscule day that means nothing. But I get to work with giants, people who are struggling every day, some of them struggling to breathe, some of them who are struggling to walk, are struggling just to get in their car. I went out today with my coworker, and he has cerebral palsy, so I loaded in his chair into his car for him, his wheelchair, and he thanked me, and I said, I don't mind a bit. And he said, but you didn't have to. I would have done it. I said, I know. And I just did it because I didn't want him to get out in that cold air and take a long time freezing because it's been very cold here today. And I think about him, you know, and he has a speech impediment. And it frustrates him sometimes because he's on the phone all day long talking with people. And sometimes people are frustrated with him, and he says, you're going to talk to me? I'm the person you're supposed to talk to. If you don't want to talk to me, you're not going to talk to anybody then. And we put people in those kind of positions where I work for a reason, because we believe that the disability survivor is the leader. They shouldn't see an organization giant unless the person has a disability. And I'm not saying people that don't have disabilities don't belong, but for so long in the brain injury community, it's all about them, and the survivors pushed aside. We're trying to show people that survivors can do it. Allie, you can do it. I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. I hear you really doing great things when you're talking. I love to hear some of the things you said. I mean, am I talking silly? Is it making sense? You tell me.
No, it totally is. It totally is. And I see it as it's almost like each of our accolades of the other, each of our edifying the other is kind of akin to boosting each other up on our shoulders, you know, so that we can get a better view of what lay ahead when it may be difficult to see even on our tippy toes, but when we get a little boost from a friend or from someone who is a concerned party, it really puts us at an advantage that we would not have had otherwise. And we don't always see ourselves in the same vein that others do, and we don't always see what's possible in the same vein that other people do. And I think that each of us meet the other in order to be our best selves becoming, you know? Even if we're
That's
not our
beautiful
best
how you
selves,
said
I like
that.
To see it as our best selves becoming. Yeah. And I wrote down something else. There's a quote that really stands out in my mind, and I don't know if you all are familiar with Joseph Campbell, but anyway, he's the author of many books and just a phenomenal individual, thought leader, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he has a quote that goes as follows: the privilege of a lifetime is being who you are.
Amen
and
to that.
To, yeah, authentic power, standing in your authentic power. And even if we find ourselves recrafting our identities or unfolding our identities because we're discovering it each day and every day. I mean, there are things that I discover about myself almost on a daily basis that was not privy to me, say, a month ago, you know, and it's just one of those things where the more it really does start with an intention, a very strong and powerful intention. And to the degree that we choose to honor our authentic selves, even if it's a different version of who we thought we would be at this point in you know, our lives, I still think that that's a beautiful place to be, and that's the only seat of power from which we can create and really transcend these seeming limitations and be just the phenomenal beings that we have the potential of being. And I also came across another quote that goes as follows. Bob Dylan is the author of it, and it says, some people feel the rain, others just get wet.
Oh, I like
and
that
so one. Isn't that beautiful? And
yeah.
I think for many of us who have experienced some type of traumatic event in our lives, especially those that were life-changing, such as brain injury or what have you, it allows us an opportunity to tap into a greater sensory self that without having walked these told you roads, I don't know that we would have had the compelling need to even explore on a deeper level. And so I just think it's really beautiful, that we get the opportunity to be deeply feeling, deeply sensing, to be ultra compassionate, you know, if we choose to walk that road. And that's a get to and not got to as well.
Exactly. That's
mm-hmm.
You said it perfect there. You really did. That rings my
Thank
bell
you.
To say that because, I mean, it really is a get to and not got to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a want to,
mm-hmm.
not have to, because
mm-hmm.
I'm not, I hope it doesn't appear I'm coming here on my high horse and say, hey, everybody, I know everything,
mm-hmm.
so therefore, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could say I knew everything. I don't know half of anything when it comes to some of the people I've met. I met people that can spin circles around me. But because I'm a survivor and because I'm walking the walk and living it, just as you are, just as all the people
mm-hmm.
on here are, and or the family members who are learning and understanding and sometimes not understanding the new you or new them and their son or daughter or mother or family member, whatever,
mm-hmm.
They're learning, hey, they didn't die. They're still the same person. They just have a different way of doing things now. And they may have different choices now. They might have different motivations. Do you ever find yourself liking foods now that you didn't like before? I do. It's,
mm-hmm.
In a sense, it's like that. It's a new flavor. And
mm-hmm.
flavors are good.
Mm-hmm.
I used to hate pickles when I was a kid. My mother would say, I'll give you $5 to eat a pickle because I just would not touch pickles. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like pickles when I was a kid. Now I put
mm-hmm.
one on every hamburger or anything similar that needs a pickle on it in the world, and I love them. That's a simple analogy, but it flavor,
mm-hmm.
the flavor of life after brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
Develop a flavor and a taste for love, compassion, and caring around the world, people. And I'm not trying to talk anything special about myself. I think you're all unique and kind, caring people out here, and you're here, the ones who have spoken so far, you're here talking because you have a passion. You want to
mm-hmm.
help. You come seeking help, but you also give it freely. You do that, Allie. You do that, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
You do that, Craig. You didn't have to do this, Craig. You could have said, you know what? Screw this. I'm throwing it away. I don't care to help anybody anymore. I'm going to be selfish and live the rest of my life and do whatever I want to do, whether it's being a rock and roll band or do whatever. But he has a heart for helping people, which
mm-hmm.
we were all on a journey to find something when we found him floating around
mm-hmm.
in internet outer space.
We found
space.
Each other.
Yeah.
We really did. And I think that was also spurred on by having a compelling desire to be connected, you know, to connect with something
yeah.
greater than ourselves for the purpose of something much greater than ourselves, at least that exists in the field of potential, you know. And, you know, I don't know if anyone's familiar with that kind of language, but talking about, like, the field of potentiality, you know. I mean, almost anything exists to the degree that we have the ability to conceive it, and it has to be something better than just our own struggle in our own corners of the world. And even
yeah.
if it doesn't exist, that doesn't mean we cannot band together and create it.
That's what I mean. We
mm-hmm.
we have the power. We do have the strength as survivors. If
mm-hmm.
we come together and go to, I don't care if it's the Brain Injury Association, get them involved. If we go to
mm-hmm.
all the state and local legislators, if we go to all the local brain injury associations, if Brain Injury Radio expands in different locations around the world, whatever it is, and different, you know, they put up, Craig was talking about it earlier, how they put labels on us, and we've learned how to play the label game. It's almost like saying the alphabet when you go down the disability soup line. You know what I mean? There's one fundraiser going on for this agency, and you don't tread on their water, and we don't tread on theirs, because somebody might file a lawsuit because they're more concerned, because it's become that way. It's become a fight over money instead of a fight, instead of a peace, love, and prosperity search for help and happiness for people with disabilities, and with the disability survivors leading the way. I'm really starting to see it a lot different than I used to. I'm starting to see little thing. The little things are big, and the big things are little. I mean, I've met some people that, when I met them, I felt nervous in the early days. When I met some famous people, and I realized they're kind of nervous too. You know, when I'm not going to say this person's name, but I got to meet them, and I was all excited and everything. And she sounded really nervous when she talked to me. Please, I'll meet you last fall. And I realize she has the same problems we all do. Sometimes we'll get nervous, even if we talk publicly all the time, or if they do, or whoever. Or, I mean, even a professional singer that goes around the world touring sometimes, they're scared to death when they go out on the stage, because they're all alone,
mm-hmm.
standing there as one person. We look at them like, wow, they've got it all together, and inside they're a mess. Craig, I know you're thinking about some of what I'm saying, because you are a professional singer and songwriter and everything.
No,
in my
I'm
book,
not.
You are in my book. I'm saying you're a professional. you're something then.
You're an accomplished. How about this? An accomplished musician.
That's,
no,
okay, that.
I am far from accomplished, and you got to ask the professionals about how professional they think I am.
No, did you not accomplish, you know, the compilation of a musical composition, and
that's what I was trying
to
say.
Didn't you put it on either CD or vinyl?
My CDs, I expressed my pain.
You digitized it. You digitized it. You made it something that can be monetized. I mean, you're really
no. I didn't make it something that can be monetized, but
well,
I blew that years ago.
I'll say
no,
it this way to both
site?
Of you.
But what's that site? What's that site that, I don't remember stuff readily, but what's the site that the gentleman who, there is a movement afoot to raise money for his medical...
Oh yeah, that's the Reverb Nation.
Thank you.
Yeah, but aren't you on that?
Yeah, I see that Sony owns
my
music.
She got you. See what you're doing
exactly.
to help somebody. She
because
got you.
You know what?
Well, I don't even own that. They own that.
Yeah, but even still, Craig, and I'm going to offer this to you, if I may. very often we have a tendency to downplay our greatness, you know. And so what I've learned to do, even if there's a tendency to kind of recoil from the compliment and think, are you sure, me, you know, that kind of thing, I'm really practicing the stretch to just be in receivership of it.
Well, hold
you know,
on for a few seconds, both of you. Here's my reply to that. There. That answers the question.
Well, thank you for your kind thoughts. You know, what I want to be known for is the service I do. I would never want to be known for that music.
But
that's
just one other aspect of who you are. You know, we're all like beautiful gems with many facets that make us all uniquely and intrinsically beautiful and special and rare and valuable. And so I think it's important to acknowledge our successes, even if in our eyes it pales in comparison to the iconic figures. The bottom line is,
did you hear how many positive things she said about you in one
sentence?
In big words too. I got to process all that.
It's true though. It's true. You rock and roll, and I really stand in awe of all that you do. And as I'm sitting here listening, you know, a part of me thinks that this movement, especially with persons who live with disabilities, is very much like a game of kickball, or kind of like relay racing, you know. I don't know that I'm a long-distance – well, I know I'm not a long-distance runner. I used to run track, actually. But the point of the matter is I've never been one for endurance, and I'm not good with that. Now, I'm a hell of a sprinter. You know, I can knock the socks off of even a lot of these young kids out here. I'm still very fit and agile. But the point that I'm making is that we have to bloom where we're planted, and for that which we're able to do, then do. Now, I may not be able to – you know, do all that you're doing, design, you know, this, like, brainchild of a beautiful offering to the universe, such as Brain Injury Radio, but in whatever way that I can contribute, and I may not even know myself, I think it's important for us to also practice almost like that stewardship of kind of midwifing other people's talents and abilities that may be a sleeping giant into ourselves, because oftentimes, I don't know what I'm able to do, but if someone can say, hey, Allie, you know, all right, well, you're not going to be able to carry a show, but you know what you can do, you know, and then it may not even ever occur to me that that was a possibility, and that allows us to, it's almost like strength training. It builds the muscle as we're building endurance, and so I think everyone wins in that situation. It's a win-win situation for everyone involved.
And the art, not just music, you know, from sewing to painting to writing, they're very healthy. And there's a lot of survivors that are finding that, their way toward that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm practicing my culinary skills and doing a number of different things and continuing to develop my...
Oh, you are going to love the Mia Markham show that's going to be starting pretty soon. She is a culinary artist with a brain injury, and she's coming out with some culinary products to fund brain injury stuff, and I don't know if it'll start this month or next month, but it's going to be all about that.
You said Mia Mark
nutrition and culinary and such products.
Beautiful! Right. I can't wait. That'll be outstanding.
Look at this.
See, many of us don't have energy for a lot of things, but that is portable and it doesn't require a lot of upstart in terms of financial investments, and so it was something that I could do right where I was without requiring more than I had to give, you know, to develop and explore. But it was also something that I needed anyway for myself, and in so doing, I'm discovering that I've kind of got something here, and a lot of people are starting to rave over my dishes, and I'm big with plating and what have you, and so it's something that, again, I can add to that repertoire of things that I can own and say, you know what, I am pretty good at that.
Awesome.
I am pretty good at that and feel very comfortable saying that, you know. But that's a practice.
And that's wonderful.
It's a practice.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Craig, what he's saying about his music, and I'm not going to tell you to keep doing your music because I know you've lost the passion for it. But I can truly say that when you tell me this is your worst song ever, the other night you were saying these songs I found out of nowhere, I think it was something like 30 songs, if I'm remembering correctly.
My darkest, not my worst, my darkest, or probably my best, but they're my darkest.
I guess because I wasn't there, I wasn't involved with your thought process. Mm-hmm. I thought some of them were beautiful, gorgeous songs.
No,
I
but
really
you understand
did.
What he's saying in terms of his darkest. It's
yeah, and I don't ever want to bring that back to you, and I'm not going to ask you to go into that because it causes you pain. And I realize, and Craig, I want to apologize internationally right now to you for continuing in the past to say, man, your music's so great. Don't quit. I realize that you want to go on to other things, and so that's your part of your journey is changing to work more in this. And so who am I to have the right to tell you what you should do when you know what you want to do, when you feel you need to move on? So I am proud to say I got to hear so many wonderful songs, though. You can never say that Craig Cecilia didn't write some beautiful music, even in heartache and pain. I'm serious about that when I say
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So thank you for it. I really
And I don't know. I have written three books that I've never, hopefully, will ever publish. And I got somebody trying to get one of them, you know, that I know that just thinks it's so. Yeah, actually, they're really ugly. Yeah, because I wrote books before I wrote music.
Oh,
what
I
are the titles of the books, Craig?
You can't find one. Is called Thin Blood. I've been messed up my whole life, and I guess it was my way of dealing with it. And I wrote so many poems, thousands of poems. I spent 22 hours a day for almost 2 years writing stuff.
Right. Wow.
Wow. You know, I didn't do much sleeping, and the less sleep I got, the more I wrote, and it just flowed like diarrhea.
Well, you must have needed to write it down. Your body must have said, I need to write this down. I need to get it out of my system. Maybe that was
catharsis.
Your way of cleansing.
Catharsis, necessary. It's necessary.
My brother
Craig,
Steve.
Would you say that a lot of artists create from a really dark place of very complex emotions?
Oh, yeah. Music, I've learned, is 85% to 95% that way.
Exactly.
Cherry seldom sees the love things, and they're pretty fake usually, and you follow that person 10 years down the road, see what they're writing. But there are some happy songs. I can't say there's no... Barney was a happy song. Guy must have been on LSD, but it was a happy song. I like it. I still sing it. My kids don't no more. They stopped. I continued.
Right.
I know how to drive them crazy. Okay. Start singing Barney in public with to them.
Wow.
You're funny.
I even got the Barney outfit.
I was going to say, you might as well talk.
You have the Barney outfit?
I do. Yeah. Well, I do. I have
you
the Barney
and
outfit.
You meet and perform together on that one.
Why, she got a Barney outfit?
No, I said
I have a pink elephant.
She's wearing her elephant one, and you wear your Barney one.
Now, one Halloween, me and my oldest daughter went as Barney and Barneyette. She's a Barney fan. She won't admit it now that she ever liked Barney, but she liked Barney.
Okay. I've gotten so.
I mean, I got into the only one I never really got into was the Teletubbies. I never figured out what is up with this guy. With
I never
guys.
Could figure those out either. I was saying, well, okay, and then just never caught on to it.
Yeah, in fact, it almost scared me. I wouldn't let my Lexi watch it because it's like some satanic going on here. I'm not getting this.
Well, I see there's
Are
one other mic. I didn't notice. I just want to check and see who this is. We got the 484 area code. I'm going to open your mic just see if you'd like to say anything. 484, would you like to say anything on Brain Injury Radio tonight?
Hello, Les. It's Jenny.
Oh, hello, Jenny. I had so many windows open, I kept forgetting this one to come back and see what that number was. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. I wasn't yesterday, but I'm doing great today. Craig kick-started something in me, and I wanted to share because this was absolutely, it was horrible at first, and I think it's relatable to most people with brain injury. We get used to the new normal. But anything new that comes into our new normal can totally shut us down. Am I right?
You're right. I've been having a hard time designing because it's not similar enough. You're exactly right.
Well, what I wanted to share is I came to the show last night and you had the new site, the Tiny Chat or whatever that was. And I got in, and it was so confusing, and it was so new that it triggered huge negative, sad, defiant emotions. I'm not going to. Forget it. I'm going.
Oh, boy.
I'm out of here. And I sat on the couch, and I got sad, and I was pouting like a little kid, and I was like, I was angry.
Oh, boy.
And then I did my usual puzzle of putting what ever emotions I have in a corner and just analyzing it and like a puzzle and trying to figure out what those emotions really mean, the real meaning of it, not just what I'm feeling, but what they really mean. And I thought about it and I realized that I'm not going to, this was an opportunity, this led to thinking and analyzing, and it made me realize it was an opportunity for new growth. And I bless you for that, because I was not going to walk away from fear of something from my first and forever family, which is you guys at Brain Injury Radio.
Aww.
I was going to learn. And so I realized that if anything you really want to do, if you want to do it bad enough, you have to try, then you have to practice, then you learn, then it becomes habit. Then it becomes routine. If you want it bad enough, that's how you get there.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think of it kind of like a song. You know, I talk about music a lot. You know, everybody out here might know this song. I don't know if everybody does. The song by Fleetwood Mac, Yesterday's Gone. I love that song because it talks about don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. You know, if you had a bad day yesterday, I hope you can learn how to release it, like letting a flower go in the wind or letting a bird out of your hand fly up in the air and setting it free. Think of that pain or that heartache that you're having or the loss of someone or the severe trauma that you went through as that bird or whatever you hold in your hand in your mind. You mentally hold that in your hand. Picture being a dove in your hand. And open your palms and say, go free. Stop thinking about today. Yesterday's gone. You know, tomorrow can be a brighter day. If we had a really bad day today, yesterday, even a whole year was bad. Maybe 2013 was your worst year in your life. I hope not, but if it was, well, you know what? 2014 is a new opportunity, and you might have some failures in it. I know I probably will. I know I'll have some hard times myself. I'll forget something and have to turn around and go all the way back home when I'm at work or something. I had to take my laptop computer to work the other day because I was going to do some things that I get some things off of it I had on it, and I left it sitting on my coffee table when I was ready to leave and drove all the way to work. And I said, oh, boy, I left it. And I wound up driving all the way back home, which made me have to make a double trip to where I work and a double trip home. But that was yesterday. Stop thinking about yesterday so much. Let it go. Tomorrow's a new day. Today and the very moment you're in is very important. This very second. Every single second, you can reach out and grab it as it's going past you. Grab it, but it's going to go past you. Unless you have a time machine or in control of the universe or your God, you can't do it. You cannot hold on to yesterday forever. I cannot hold on to the life that I lost due to the death of my brain injury. The death, it was like a death when I had brain injury. It felt like my life died. It felt like I ceased to exist. The old me was gone, and I couldn't find him, and I looked so hard. It's like I was banging on every door, every window. Please, 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 somebody show me how to get back home. I don't know how to get here. Somebody rescue me. And it's like, Les Paul, I'm over here. And I turn my head, and then I look over to the other side. No, I'm over here. It's like ghosts. It's like, wow, it's just dust in the wind. I'm not seeing anything. Is anybody hearing me? Am I trapped inside myself? Did I get locked up somewhere in a dungeon? Where am I? And are they torturing me in water torture? What is this? Why can't I think? Why am I not able to function? Why do I not want to live? Why has my life become such turmoil that I hurt to think about love, kindness, or care? That was me. I'm describing the guy I used to be. He was a very hurt, sad individual who felt like the whole universe came crushing down on my head and my life died. And yet somehow I lived through numerous brain operations. I mean, I've had people talk to me. I've had doctors say, Les Paul, I don't know why you're alive, but I'm glad you made it through all that stuff. I'm sorry you had to suffer so much. Now I can say, I made it. I talked earlier during the show that it was so cold yesterday and tonight, especially yesterday, we had very high wind, and my dog got sick last night. And he started running up to me, and he kept telling me something was going on, like he needed to go out, and he had to throw up. And something he ate must have been bad. I don't know what it was. And his name's Bandit, and he's just acting like, oh, my gosh, there's something going on. He's running back and forth. And I said, Bandit, come here. And he comes over to me, and he's shaking. And he did it again. I just cleaned up the first time. I said, what's the matter, buddy? I was getting nervous. So I thought I might have to take him to some kind of a doctor's animal clinic. And he was all right after that. But then he had to go out three times. And it was so cold outside. Each time I went out, I didn't realize the wind was blowing about 30 miles an hour. It was a very high wind. When the wind blew across my head, where all the operations I've described on my head are, within 3 minutes, my head became hurting real bad. And he wasn't through. He had to go to the bathroom real bad. And so I just stood there, tried to take it. I said, hurry up, Bandit. I'm starting to hurt real bad. Oh, gosh, this hurts. And by another 30 seconds, it was so bad I could barely walk. I was in so much pain. It was like I could feel every single spot that I was operated on in my brain, and it hurt. It was almost like they were operating on my brain. It was so bad. I started shaking. I said, come on, buddy, and I picked him up and took him back in. And I went in the house, and I just went straight to my bedroom and lay down going, oh, my God, my head hurts so bad. And it was worse than when I explained I had my worst migraines. I mean, I was in a lot of pain. And it took all my energy. It's like, wow, I just sunk into my bed and laid there for about 20 minutes shaking. It was that bad. And that's how cold it was. I think it was 12 degrees or 14 degrees. I can't remember the exact, with high wind. And I didn't have any kind of a cap on or anything. And I didn't realize, I've got some metal clips in my brain. I've got a porcelain plate in one place, and I've got a deep trench in one place. And I could feel all of that in a way that is like, oh, it's like bending metal.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, I can feel my brain injury. And Kim described hers the other day sort of like that.
About 4 months out of the year, just about every day.
Yeah.
You said what, Kim?
I feel like that about 4 months out of the year, every day.
Well, when it reaches
where your brain is physically sensitive, like where you're feeling the cold of...
Well, explain your temperatures. That might explain it.
Well, when it's extreme, actually more than that, because when it's extremely hot or extremely cold, I feel exactly like he describes about 4 months out of the year when it's winter here and it's cold. It's almost like those... the clip becomes a icicle
conductor.
That's stabbing through my head.
Yeah.
Is it like a conductor?
Yeah, yeah.
Very much. You described it good saying that.
It is. It's just like that, and I feel just like he said. And, you know, those are the things that people can't see that stop you, you know, and for some reason the same thing happens to me when it's really hot, too, like at the peak of our summer, you know, when it's really hot, the heat and the sun just start making me have my head pound too, and I don't know if the clip is the heat conducts the same way with the metal as the cold or what it is, but you know, and it's not predictable, just like the weather is predictable. That's why it makes it kind of hard.
Well, the second time I took him out, it was 3:30 a.m. because he was still feeling bad.
He
and
must
I said,
have
okay, one more
time. Bad.
I couldn't find a cap or anything to put on, and it was very windy again, and it was already down to the lowest of the low, I think, for last night. And I said, okay, I'm going to try to make it shorter. He dragged me out to a tree in our backyard, and he would not come in. I'm saying, come on, Bandit. And there comes that pain again, very severe. And I actually put my finger in my mouth and bit my finger. It hurt so bad I was fixing to scream. I had to do it to keep from screaming outside in the dark. And it was that severe. I mean, it was like someone was pounding me with their fist on an injury. And I said, oh, my God, I didn't know I had this bad of pain at back that could come back. And I said, come on, Bandit. I picked him up and just carried him and made it back to the house. And once again, I'm exhausted again. It took me about 30 minutes just to take him out two times, which should have taken only about 5 or 10 minutes at the most. And guess what? He had to go out one more time. So that time, I looked everywhere in my house. I couldn't find a cap. I couldn't find something, a hoodie, nothing, whatever. I said, where are all my caps? I used to have a few. Where's something? And so I said, okay, I saw another coat laying there. I saw a denim coat. I picked up the denim coat, put it on my head, and wrapped it around the back of my head and pulled it over the front where I could just barely see out of it. I said, okay, Bandit, this is the last time, buddy. Let's go. And finally he took care of his business, and it didn't hurt me so bad. But that I just use that as a way to explain something that may be quite unexplainable to people, how truly traumatic the trauma and brain injury and aneurysm can be. Because, I mean, I was near screaming and like someone was stabbing me kind of pain. It was that bad. And when I came in, I was just shaking again. I mean, shaking violently. I mean, like someone had beaten me up. And within about a minute, my shaking started calming down, and I'm feeling my head, and it felt cold on the back of it. I'm saying, wow, boy, do traumatic brain injury survivors have it hard. You know,
you need a stocking cap.
Yeah,
I think it's...
And I didn't.
Making sure you...
It doesn't help a lot.
Keep one hand those things that you need. Keep one hand those things that you need,
yeah.
You know?
You really need one of those. It doesn't stop it completely, but it's not near as bad as going out and letting your dent be totally exposed. Exactly.
And you think I would have been ready for that, but because I live in a warmer climate, we're not used to this kind of cold weather we're
having.
Isn't
that something? This Arctic vortex. Because it's amazing because we've had below zero temperatures here, you know, below freezing. It was like 11 degrees earlier. Yeah, and it's really something. What about barometric pressure fluctuations? Is that
I've been trying to figure out sometimes why I've got such a bad headache, and somebody mentioned that one day about I don't know what the humidity is and the pressure is outside. I said, oh, my God, I forgot about that. And lo and behold, I don't know if it was Kim or Craig or who, but somebody had someone on as a guest one time.
I remember.
Who?
A guest. It was a guest. I remember on Kim's show, I think.
I was thinking so. Talked about barometric pressure, how it can cause migraines.
Yeah, maybe that's what we could do to be gainfully employed. We could be weather people.
We can be the thermometer you put outside of people's houses.
To the local news.
Yeah, pretty much. We can pretty much tell better than the guys who are guessing, who are meteorologists, so we can actually tell for sure what's coming.
But at the same time, I'll say this. I didn't say that great pain is there for sympathy. It's not. I didn't mention it for that. But I want people to understand when we as survivors stand up and speak, sometimes we go through great pain and great costs to be here. to be able to do anything, to be on Brain Injury Radio, to get out of bed. Sometimes it's a battle to lift your head
you
off
know,
that pillow.
What you talked about, too, that people can't see, you know, and you get accused of faking or being a deadbeat or whatever, is that one thing begets the other. Like when I have that kind of a headache like you had last night that I had the day before, you know, for me, it's not only the fatigue of carrying the pain around all of the time, but anxiety, wondering if my brain's exploding again. There's a lot of things wrapped up, you know, that people can't see, you know, that are both physical and psychological.
Well, when you said that,
that's
it brought
true.
Back a fear I had, a great fear I had, because when I had my first aneurysm, after everything was taken care of and everything, they told my family members and everything, now listen, your son has survived beyond anything we ever expected, but we couldn't remove it all. It would kill him to complete the operation on how severe his aneurysm or his AVM was in his brain that caused the aneurysm, I mean. And what my mother and later the doctor explained to me when I was able to start understanding is that I had such a severe malformation in my brain from birth that if they would have operated on it, it would have killed me. And so for 10 years, I had to walk around with that time bomb, not knowing if, when, or ever if it would explode again, which it did 10 years later. And the second aneurysm was much more severe than the first one. The pain was far beyond explanation. And once again, I'll say I'm not trying to brag about pain. I'm not trying to say I'm king of pain. I'm sure there's been a lot of people that feel like I'm the king of pain who have been on Brain Injury Radio and all over the country. And I'm not trying to say I earned that, but, oh, my God, it was painful.
Gee, if only the doctors believed it.
Yeah. And that's where medical model or a person first model, you know, the survivor first model, where we can speak through experience. I'm speaking through the real things that really happened to me as I remember some of them, and my family members told me the rest because I didn't remember it. I had no memory for several months. But all my family members, that many of them have passed, I've still got some, described it, and every one of them told me the same thing over and over and over for years to make sure it set in my memory before something happened to them. And so it's like a recording that played over and over and over in my head until I remembered it. It's kind of strange.
I have a question when you are, when you're finished talking.
You can go ahead.
Les Paul. You sure?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I am curious to know you all's feedback on this, so I'm going to throw this out to those of us who are on the line for feedback, if you don't mind. But I have a really dear friend. She and I have been friends for about 10 years now. She's an older friend. She's in her 70s, and we just have so many similarities that parallel one another's life experiences, including brain injury survivorship, because she actually has been the survivor of two aneurysms. And I'd never met her before her aneurysm, so I don't know what her personality was prior to.
Okay.
However, I'm noticing changes in her personality and her cognition. Her neurological functioning is different, and I'm not so much keeping tabs on that as I am being fully aware of how I'm feeling when I'm in her presence and when we're talking. She's becoming more aggressive, and we get into these discussions that turn really heated, and then before you know it, it's a full-blown contentious discussion, and she's just very contentious and just argumentative and cantankerous. I just feel like she's become an energy drain, almost like an energy vampire. And I do care for her and love her, but I'm also bearing witness to the fact that I'm getting mashed up in the process of trying to love her as a friend. And I feel like it's not good for my mental health. It's not good for my overall health, wellness, and well-being. And I've really been deeply concerned about the course that our relationship is taking.
Okay.
Hers and mine. And I'm thinking of transitioning out of the friendship because she refuses to accept that there's anything going on with her. I have asked if she wanted me to accompany her to her neurologist, and if the answer was no, because it's very private, I wouldn't expect her to.
Yeah.
And she sees me as a goddaughter. She regards me as a goddaughter and introduces everyone to me that way, or she'll just say godfriend. You know, we refer to one another as godfriend. She's in her 70s. And I'm in my 40s, and so the thing is, she's very youthful, and age rarely is a factor. I mean, it almost seems like a non-issue. However, I can't get around the fact that we just keep bumping heads, and she's moving, and she's really expecting me to step up and basically take the helm of this project of helping her move into her new house, and it's just too much. I'm doing that for myself and don't have the energy to do that for myself, and because everyone's brain injury affects them differently, I don't know that she deals with that same cognitive fatigue, and so I don't know that she even has the capacity to be compassionate about my fatigue levels and how if I help her, it's going to be to my own detriment, especially when you couple the fact that it's not just physical helping. You know, it's not just physically helping her to move, but the fallout, the emotional, the energetic, the cognitive fallout of just being in her face like that. It's bad enough being on the phone and feeling like you can't get off the phone, and she wanted me to accompany her on a vacation.
I would say you've got to take care of yourself. You've got to.
Sure.
Because you cannot take care of anybody else if you don't. At the same time, I wouldn't totally give up on her. I maybe try a totally different approach, getting someone else to try to help her. You know, get a friend involved, maybe someone that knows her.
Mutual friend?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not saying I know the answer. I don't. I know I don't know the answer. But just try, you know, I'll just say something I've said on here. My mother said there's many ways to skin a cat, was her term she used a lot of times. And I'd say, what do you mean, Mom? She said, if you can't get someone to see what you're saying, sometimes somebody else will listen to them. I'll use the example of my brother Phil versus me with my dad. You know, I've told on here my dad would sometimes become violent with me. For some reason, my brother Phil always got along better with him than me. Even though I did all kinds of things for him, I'd try to be nice, I'd try to do this. I mean, we'd be in the same room together, and he'd say, hey, how you doing, Phil? And he wouldn't even say, hey, Les. I said, how are you today, Dad? Shut up. Oh, okay. Shut up. I mean it. Shut up. You weren't asked to say anything. You get out of here. And that's how he treated me a lot of times. And it made me feel like a 15th-class son to my father. And so my brother Phil could get through to him. He'd come to me sometimes, say, Les, I know Dad's treating you bad. I said, I don't get it, Phil. He treats you a certain way, and he treats me a different way, and we live in the same house. We do the same things, and he just sees me like I'm Mr. Evil to him and like I'm trouble to him. What is it? He said, I don't know. He said, so I'll go talk to him for you. And that might be what it takes with this person. It might not work at all. Someone else doing it.
Yeah. I'm feeling like it's too much work. It's too much work. Because, I mean, she's been uninvited to a lot of our family events. And just family and friends are all wondering how we even stay friends because she's just becoming so much more difficult than I've ever known her to be. And then she'll launch into these attacks like, well, that's your opinion, that's your opinion. And I'm saying to so-and-so, it's not my opinion, that's my experience. Well, how come no one else is telling me? And I said, well, maybe they don't care enough to tell you because, number one, they may fear your
rebuffing.
Well,
the simple fact that you come here to Brain Injury Radio tells me that you need support. I'm on Brain Injury Radio not only as a host because I also need support, and I get support from you guys, whether you know that. And if I haven't thanked everyone who is on here and who listens, I want to thank everybody from the bottom depth of my heart, because I get a lot of support by being here. Not only being a host, but being a survivor, that gets to meet people like you and all the different guests and hosts that I've learned so much from. I couldn't say what I'm saying right now with conviction if I would have met so many people that have been through the hardship of brain injury. You have a hard time. You have a hard time yourself. You come here because you're seeking some help and resolution yourself, as I do, as Craig does, as Kim does, as all the different hosts, every single one of us. And yet sometimes someone can say something to you like what you just told me, and it makes you feel bad because it's like, wow, they just don't get that I can't do but so much before I become fatigued, and then I become I feel like I'm a failure. Even though you're not a failure, you just get fatigued and you can't keep going. There's a
that
song.
That and.
Yeah? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I think I've heard other people echo the same experience, is not just that. It's almost like this cumulative effect of, I don't know if this would be the equivalent of what Kim calls the full basket syndrome, but there's a point at which you reach a point of saturation, you know, and cannot do anything more. And if you try, it almost feels like I'm just knocked off the power grid. You know, everything shuts down, and it can put me in a position where it's almost like not just taking a few steps forward for myself, but extending myself to taking several more steps forward for a friend or for someone who is very challenging, and I'm starting to question the merits of the friendship, but in so doing, attempting to practice my friendship muscle, because that's something that I'm wanting to work on and to improve, especially in
something I talk about often.
It causes me a major setback, and then I'm not able to really function for, say, 2 weeks, you know, and everything falls by the wayside with my own project. But
well, she needs to find her independence.
Yeah, Allie, can I say something? For my two cents anyway, you know, you can love everybody, but you don't have to like everybody. And, you know, I've had a few soul suckers in my life, and if my brain injury...
What suckers? What kind of suckers?
Soul suckers.
Soul suckers. Yeah.
They'll bleed you dry. You know, they'll bleed you dry. A friend is somebody who accepts you as you are, and if you can't tell her, you know, that you're not going to be able to physically help, you know, with the move because you have these fatigue issues, and be honest with her and her be able to accept you for who you are, then I think you should distance yourself and get rid of some of the toxicity, because it isn't helping her to enable her to be rotten. Everybody else is just scattering like rats and not telling her. You know, you're at least trying to be a friend and be honest and helpful and tell her. And if she doesn't respond, that doesn't mean that you've got to sit there and keep getting bitch slapped, you know.
Exactly. Well, thanks for saying that, because you said the truth.
You know, walk away, give her the yellow pages with movers, circle it, and say good luck with that.
And just because you offered support doesn't mean you're a floor mat or a doormat and they can walk all over you. It's like you open the door and let them in and say, oh, man, here's my walking trap. I'm just going to walk all over this person, take advantage of everything they've got to offer. It's like getting free room service, free dinner, and everything else. You know, why do I have to do it? They'll do it for me. In independent living, we'll teach you how to go to the well. We'll teach you how to go to the water and grow your food yourself for a while, but then we want you to show us how you can do it. And even if you fail, we'll try to help a little while again. But eventually we're going to start pulling away a little bit and see how you do it on your own, because we believe that the best way to do it is doing it for yourself, learning how to do it for yourself. Because then you know how to feed other people by feeding yourself and having some extra to give someone else. I hear you saying that's what you were doing, but she's demanding more and more and more till the point it becomes all of you. And then more than all of you. And then suddenly there's no of Allie. We need
you,
Allie.
It's exhausting. Thank you. I need me, too. I've got too much going on, and this is going to be the best year ever. And I can't have my most incredible, productive, prosperous, best year ever if I am kowtowing to persons that I've already made a determination about. And it's not that I don't love her. It's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't have extreme compassion and high regard, but I love myself so much more. And I have that degree of self-compassion to such an extent that it trumps my desire to be altruistic. You know, I mean, you can only give what you can, and you can't give from an empty cup. And I feel
sometimes
like I'm risking.
I just wanted
depletion.
To say this to you. Sometimes the very best love you can give them is tough love, and say, listen, I'll help you as much as I can, but I'm going to back away. I really love you, and I hope we'll stay friends. I hope we're really close friends, really. But I can't take all of this. I'm a survivor myself, but I have to have my daily struggles. There are days I have trouble getting out of bed, and you're asking me to come help you move things. I can't do it. I'm sorry. And just say, I love you, or I care about you, but there's only so much I can take, you know?
I'm going to try that. I've had many conversations. Yeah, it does. I've had ongoing conversations with her, and like Kim was saying, the bitch laughed, you know, episodes just become, you know, in full force, and it's like out of nowhere. And I'm like, how did we get here? I mean, it's just bizarre. And I'm not the only one that experiences it, and I'm just to the point now where I'm exercising that radical self-care, and it's not personal. Not personal. It's a matter of self-preservation. And it's also modeling, you know. To me, you have to have boundaries in place. And
boundaries.
Yeah, and we have to teach people how to treat us, too. And whereas it may not have been so much of an issue before, it is now. And maybe my level of sensitivity is ratcheting up, and maybe it's one of those ebb and flow things, kind of like the fluctuations in barometric pressure. I can't say why, when, and how. I just know that when I'm feeling sensitive like that, I need to honor that, and I'm not even going to apologize for it. It is what it is. This is what I can do right now, and if I can't, then I'm not able to do right now. And you know,
sometimes
at such a point I can, then I will. But if not, it doesn't mean I don't love you and care for you.
Even people that claim they're your good friends, and she really might be a good friend. I don't know her. But sometimes they'll do it with ulterior motives. Well, you know, she's really smart at what she does, and maybe I don't know it, but she has a brain injury. Maybe she'll forget. I've heard people talk that way about me. I've caught people talking about me saying, hey, let's get Lester to do it. He might not even remember when he's finished. And they didn't know I heard everything they said. And I go get mad, go in the bathroom and want to scream and said, oh, I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him. I pretend nothing happened. And I come back and I say, so you want to use and abuse me? Is that what you're saying? As a brain injury survivor, shame on you. What are you talking about, Les? I would never do that. I overheard what you said. Shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really my friend. You play my friend. Get out of my life. I had to say that to a person. I hated saying that. I realized they were lying to me about being my friend. They were actually abusing my friendship in a support group setting by asking me to do everything for them and saying, oh, I just don't know yet. Keep teaching me. They're getting me to do their stuff for them. People will take advantage of you. People will use you, and they'll kick you around and say, look at that fool. They don't know what they're doing, but they're doing all my work for me. Thank you. And
you could try having an intervention if you wanted on your way out the door. If there is more than one person, that how have they been handling it? Have they distanced themselves from her, or do they just stay and put up with it? What are these other people?
I don't know anyone who is still connected. The circle that I know her from, almost everyone has unanimously said, I don't know how you deal with, how are you guys even friends? And maybe it's because we just got one another, but it's starting to be abusive. And I know she doesn't mean it, and she is a sweet tea. She really is. But at the same token, just the fact that she's a brain injury survivor and may be able to claim, hey, it's unintentional and this is just one of the ways my brain injury manifests itself, that doesn't exonerate her from, you know, the damaging effect. It doesn't exonerate her from the responsibility of being a good steward of a friend. And so I'm not going to allow her to mistreat me. I feel disrespected and mistreated. And
Allie?
Yeah.
Allie, I was just wondering, I'm thinking that as a brain injury survivor, I know that we get very focused on something. And I'm wondering if possibly because she feels so close and trusting, she's actually projecting her emotions out to you. Not really
like,
at you, but just not knowing how to say it.
Can you give me an example? I'm not sure I'm clear on what you're saying.
Well, she could be pissed off at you for something. And what she's
mm-hmm.
really maybe expressing is that she's upset because she just can't get it or she can't do it or she wants to and she has no one else that she can vent to.
I don't know, but I'm not her therapist and I'm not interested in being a doormat either. And so all these
right.
things may be factors.
Does
no,
she
I'm
have a therapist?
Positive and negative out, and don't let the door hit you on the way out. That is the way we have to go because we can't let anything upset our apple cart. It's already been
yeah.
upset enough. But I was just saying that this may be why
mm-hmm.
she is doing it, because she's projecting, because she trusts you.
And
I
it hurts
know.
To say goodbye to a friend. I just want to say that. I've had some people that I really thought were my friends that I found that really weren't. They had
me
really
too.
Aligned themselves really close to me, and I said, what a fool was I. Wow, these people are taking advantage of me. I've talked about this man before on Brain Injury Radio. He actually stole from me. This is a man mm-hmm. that came to my house that is a survivor himself. He started coming to our support group. I didn't plan on coming to my house. I don't normally allow that, but he had had several bad health problems. His wife died, and he had, I forget what his other disability was. He just had really hard times, and I actually took him out to dinner feeling sorry for him, and he stole my credit card account.
Oh, no.
Oh,
several
that.
Hundred dollars from me. And then I saw him a few months later after I had to call the police on him, and they went and took care of it, and I got most of it back. A couple of $100 was never gotten back. But he saw me in a Walmart. I was in Walmart maybe 2 months ago, and I said, I don't want to speak to that man. He makes me sick. And then I said, you know, I'm not going to turn around and walk away from him. I'm not going to speak to him on purpose, but I'm just going to stay here because I was at the return desk taking things back that I had bought and that weren't right. And he turns around from behind me. He walked away, and he turns around, puts his arm around me. Hey, Les Paul, how are you doing? I said, how could you say that like that? You stole from me. Oh, my dear brother, your memory's so bad. I said, you stole from me. You used my credit card behind my back. How'd you even get it? I don't even know how you got it. Les Paul, I would have never stolen from you. I tried to explain to you when the police came. And I said, I wasn't there when the police came. And he was trying to win his way back into my life as a friend. This is a guy that worked at a pharmacy where I used to go. It's the only way I got to know him. And he actually helped people with disabilities, and some of them came to our support group. And I just knew him as a friend. I didn't know he was like this. And he started taking terrible advantage of other people, I found out. And, I mean, he sold disability equipment. And I found out that he was terrible. And I was embarrassed to tell people that I knew not to go back to him. He might steal them blind. And you never know. It hurt because I really thought I had a good friend in him. But my mother met him, and she said, Les, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. He talks kind of funny the way he explains things. Almost like he's trying to get into something, trying to figure something
mm-hmm.
out. I didn't see it. I said, no, Mom, his wife died. And I felt sorry for him, and he came to my office all the time. I mean, I didn't know him at all until he just came in one day looking for some support for brain injury. And next thing you know, he stole several hundred dollars from me. So we have to be protective of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes people don't. Not in a paranoid fashion.
Yeah,
just,
no,
you know.
Not at all.
Oh. Yeah, and I appreciate everyone's input. I don't know if I'm unique in this regard, but I don't develop deep attachments with people very easily. It's not that I don't want to, but that's something that I'm working on. And incidentally, I've made two new friends with some really wonderful women since the new year, and I have every intention on nurturing those relationships. And I'm a very, I don't know, practical and realistic type person. I'm optimistic, but I'm also a pragmatist. So my thing is I recognize that people come into our lives for a reason, season, or a lifetime. And, okay, maybe we've reached the end of our life cycle with our friendship, and that's okay. I honestly don't really feel much of anything about it because I just, I don't know. I don't know how that comes off. It's not that I don't care.
Well, the emotional ping pong has probably worn you out.
It takes a lot of energy for me to maintain in-person friendships anyway, and so maybe it's just something that I see as a matter-of-fact type thing. Okay, well, it's time to transition out. Not that I don't care, but I'm so focused, hyper-focused really, on shoring up my foundation and taking my life to another level that I've not yet known of before, that trumps my desire to hold on to anything that's not working for me. And it's clearly not working for me. And if anything, it feels like it's dragging me down. And I don't have the energy. I don't have the energy to do more and to be more and to even be available for myself and wonderful new opportunities and experiences with people who would be more in alignment with what's in my highest and best good. You know, I mean, some people just click more than others, and it's not even personal. So I guess I'm looking at it from the standpoint of practicing non-attachment and also not even taking it personal. I'm not even taking it personal, and she's yelling at me oftentimes, and I don't know.
Why?
I
say it like this,
Ollie. That's how I feel about it.
It just recently turned a new year, a new level in your life, a new opportunity. It's time to let some of those bad things go if they're holding on to you and feeling like extra baggage and it's just a burden. Let them go. I don't like saying goodbye to a friend, and maybe it won't be permanent. You just don't know.
I was going to say you don't really have to cut it, you know, that tight. Like you said, there's a one of the gals on the shows that talks about brain bucks, you know, and we have a budget, a budget of those. And you've been spending a lot this way.
It's right here in front of me, Kim. I just read over brain bucks. It's right in front of me. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, of telling her, I mean, it's honest, it's what you said, is that, you know, because of your brain injury, you only have a certain amount of energy, and there's some new things that you're really excited about trying, and you won't be able to spend, you know, if she doesn't see you around as much or you guys don't talk as much, not to worry about it, but that you just physically don't have the energy to keep the relationship going at the same level it's been and go out and try some of these new year, new opportunities that you want to do and, you know, try to leave it on a good note. And maybe once you've been gone for a while, she'll get some other feedback or have a spiritual awakening or something will change in her. And if not, you'll just naturally grow apart, but you just kind of leave the door open with a crack and put it on yourself, you know, rather than her. And that's just, I don't know whether you know this, but I have about 20 brain bucks to spend, and you know, I'm spending about 25 right now or 30, so I've got to cut back some things in my life. To make a little more room to expand in some other directions. And it's not personal. It's something I need to do.
Yeah. I started
That's
off.
Good. I'm going to, yeah.
on my birthday.
That resonates with me. I'm going
to try
that one.
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you.
I was just going to say on my birthday in March of last year, I decided I was going to try as many new things as I could do without
mm-hmm.
failing and continue being safe about it, not overdo my limit and try to protect myself, but I wound up overdoing it. Kim was one of the first people to tell me, then Craig. And I found out I am capable of doing a lot more than I ever imagined possible. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
But I started spreading it so thin in so many different directions all at the same time that I started realizing, oh, boy, I missed an appointment there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying to my supervisor one day,
yep.
Oh, wow, I'm sorry, I forgot all about that consumer coming in to visit me that has a brain injury. Oh, wow, I apologize. She says less. This person
mm-hmm.
was waiting to see you for weeks. And I'm going, oh, my goodness, I'm sorry. I've completely forgotten. I didn't write it down. And I wasn't even keeping up with my planner. And I'm saying, oh, boy, another one bites the dust. And so I had to pull back. And I
mm-hmm.
I have had to recategorize things. Here just the past
what?
Couple of days I've been thinking about, okay, I've got to reduce this. Focus more on things, Brain Injury Radio, I want to focus on it really good. I think all of the hosts on there, we need to kind of pick our winners and losers of what our best assets are and sometimes let go a little something so we can even be better to help more people, more folks like you.
Mm-hmm.
And how you guys have helped me, this is a wonderful thing. And by the way, we've got 5 minutes left. If
yeah, I was going to say, are you watching the clock?
Yeah, I just happened
well,
to notice.
Wind is up.
And thank you, guys. I appreciate the feedback. I'm
thank
really,
you.
Yeah, take all that to heart and have a real honest conversation with her. And no judgment. It doesn't mean I don't love her or don't care and I'm not compassionate. But, I only have a limited amount of energy to spend.
In fact,
I
you're trying
like
to help her,
that,
help
but.
Herself.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing
mm-hmm.
on this Brain Injury Radio show right now. We're trying to teach
mm-hmm.
each other and learn from each other how to help ourselves. On the
mm-hmm.
image I've got on there of the star on Brain Injury Radio, it's got little stars
mm-hmm.
all around it, a golden star. Does everybody see that? I
yep.
thought of that as being a big symbol as each star spreads out and makes another star. We're all stars, if you think about it. I'm not saying there's a winner or a loser. We're all a star. And we do with that star what we want to do. We can be a bright, shining light of hope, or we can be a dying supergiant in outer space where it fades into nothing. You know, you could have had your chance and failed 100 times, and someone kept offering it to you, but it just didn't work. I've seen people that's happened to. I have to admit, it happened to me sometimes. But each and every one of us, as long as we're still alive, I hope you'll see every hour of every day, except when you're asleep, you need to rest and let your dreams do the work. Then turn on your Dreamweaver machine and play that song, Dreamweaver, while you're at it. And just
mm-hmm.
think, wow, how wonderful is it just the fact that I was alive tonight, not just to be on Brain Injury Radio, not to be a member of society, but that I got to be part of the whole vast continuum of time, and I'm still alive and thriving after surviving a traumatic, terrible, devastating injury, and I'm still breathing. Until my last breath, I hope I'll be helping someone. I hope on the day that I'm found dead somewhere that I was trying to help somebody. I really do. I hope it won't be me living in a gutter or something where I wasn't doing anything, became not helpful, but sometimes a person like that couldn't even help it because of the things that went by. You know, there's trillions of different ways, I say, sometimes a million, a trillion, whatever, ways to have a brain injury. But there's only one word I know to say that really means anything. That's love. Love can conquer all. Love for your fellow man. Love for all the people on Brain Injury Radio, and love for the people in your community, and love for yourself to make sure you take care of yourself and go get a good night's rest tonight and say, job well done to yourself. I want to thank all of you for being on here tonight because you're a blessing to me, because without you, there would be no me. Without Craig and without Kim and without all the other hosts, I would just be out here floating around with, like a fish without a fin. And for the people who have lost someone, like my dear friend Edna, I'll send out a prayer. Send out a prayer for her tonight. She's in a lot of hurt right now from losing her husband. And she's a brain injury survivor herself. And yet she told me today that she wants to help our support group grow even harder. How can you do that when you're mourning the loss of your husband? They loved each other dearly. That's the strength of a survivor. That's someone who wants to make a difference and stop the silent epidemic from being silent. And also, I just want to say I love all you guys and thank you for coming tonight. And come back every night. And whose show is tomorrow? Is it yours, Kim?
It is. Yes. Barbara Webster is going to be on tomorrow night. She's an author of Surviving After Brain Injury. So
Okay. We'll
have her on the first half of the show and then open chat and indie music in the back half.
Okay. Well, everybody, have a beautiful evening or morning now and great tomorrow. Goodbye.
Okay, great
Thank
show. Thanks,
you.
Les.
Great
Good night,
show.
Everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Right,
bye.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Night, Jenny.
Night, night.